वासुदेवाय।
Oh, this projector is very good. Vidyapeeth. Okay. Okay, they have usurped it. So today we'll have a very quick overview of third canto, 33 chapters in maybe 3 hours or less than that. Sorry for the delay. So we had a 2 hour long meeting with Janina Swarupa Angadangit Babu about worship, Giriraj and all. So I will not do it the regular way where I just give a flow of the entire canto. So we will keep it short. At the same time you will also speak to some extent. So you don't have to be prepared. So whatever you remember you tell. Okay. And we will not go into the details of all the prayers and verses, etc., as you know, because 33 chapters, each chapter may hardly get 5 minutes. So you can divide yourselves into two teams. Two teams. How many are there? 12 are there? 11, 5 plus 6. Wherever Prabhuji is there, 5 people should be there. He is the senior most. He is equal to 2, that's what I am saying. Two teams. So you will give the overview. I will facilitate. So the second canto ended with Sukadeva Goswami's beginning of Padmakalpa. He said, I will speak about Padmakalpa. But suddenly the camera shifts to Naimisharanya, and the sages of Naimisharanya ask Suta Goswami to narrate Vidura and Maitreya conversation. So Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami conversation was going on in a certain flow. So, but actually that conversation was narrated by Maitreya to Vidura. By Suta Goswami to Savanakada Rishis. So Savanaka Rishi immediately suddenly asks that we want to know more about Vidura. Because in the first canto, 13th chapter, Vidura goes to Hastinapur after some pilgrimage. So there they remembered, oh, Vidura went there, Hastinapur. Why did he come out of Hastinapur in the first place? So, and why did he discuss with Maitreya? So that was their question. So that is the link between second canto and third canto. So the first chapter, we will see that Parikshit Maharaj also became inquisitive to know about the conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. So when Savanakada Rishis wanted to hear about the conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, Suta Goswami quotes the narrates that conversation as discussed by Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, right? Because they already discussed, let me quote them. So there are loops of conversations, we should not get lost. So Parikshit Maharaj says, Vidura renounced the home and entered the forest. So the conversation that happened between Maitreya and Vidura is very glorious conversation, and I want to know about it. When and where did this conversation take place? So what did Sukadeva Goswami, what did Parikshit Maharaj say about this conversation? This team, Krishna team, Balaram team. Krishna team, what was the verse that Nahiyal Parthodayastasya Vidurasya Amalatmanaha Tasmin Variyasi Prashnaha Sadhuvadopa Brumhita. So this conversation is not meant for any meager purpose, because the question asker was Vidura, who is Amalatmanaha. So his questions are approved by great saintly persons. So like that Parikshit Maharaj glorifies. Then Sukadeva Goswami begins to answer. So actually Dhritarashtra tried to kill his nephews, Pandavas, and Duryodhan, Dushyasan, Shakuni and party, they were constantly scheming how to insult and annihilate the Pandavas. So one day Vidura went to Dhritarashtra and said, this Duryodhan is a very cunning fellow. Sa esha dosha purushadvidaste grahan pravishtoyam apatyamatya. So he is Purushadvid. He is envious of the Supreme Purusha, Krishna. Right? Grihan pravishtoyam apatyamatyam. He entered your house, he is sin personified, dosha, offense personified, and you are thinking that you are his, he is his, your son. So you should immediately give him up, this son. So you should banish him. So like that he says. Then suddenly Duryodhan comes and becomes angry. Who asked the son of this kept mistress to come and spy on behalf of our enemies and advise something against us? How dare he is? So we immediately check him out of Hastinapur palace. We just leave his breathing, right? We just leave the breath in his nostrils as the remuneration for his lifelong service. So Vidura was checked out. So Vidura had this glorious consciousness of seeing this whole incident as one that is orchestrated by Krishna's internal energy, and he could understand that Krishna's external energy was acting upon Duryodhan and make him behave like this. So he just came out of this. He just kept the dhanu there. Swayam dhanur dharini dhayamana gatavyatho yad uruvanayana. So he just left the bow there and came out of Hastinapur palace and took this opportunity to go to so many pilgrimage places. There he saw so many holy deities, and he travelled through so many cities and villages. He showed the ideal conduct of a mendicant during his pilgrimage. So he reached the bank of Yamuna and he met Uddhava, right after visiting so many holy places. So when he met Uddhava, he asked several questions about the welfare of all the family members. Are Krishna Balaram doing well? What about the other Yadus and other Kurus? How are Pandavas and Kunti? So you were in touch with all of them, but I am out of touch. I just left the palace of Hastinapur. So please tell me. So then Vidura, when he asked so many questions in the first chapter, the second chapter begins with Uddhava's remembrance of Krishna, where he remembered all the pastimes of Krishna beginning from his birth, childhood. Initially Uddhava went into a trance, right, meditative remembrance. He was unable to speak only, right? So Uddhava is such an exalted person that even in childhood also he used to play with dolls of Krishna and worship Krishna, and even when his mother was calling him for breakfast, he wouldn't go. He was so absorbed in his worship. So Prabhupada says that childhood, if Krishna consciousness is inculcated in children right from the beginning of their lives, so they will grow into exalted devotees. So sakatham sevaya tasya kalyena jarasangataha prushto vartam pratibhruyat bhartuhu padavanusmaran. So when Vidura asked so many questions about Krishna, immediately Uddhava went into a remembrance of Krishna, and he remembered Krishna's lotus feet, bhartuhu padavanusmaran. Although he is very old, kalena jarasangataha, still his memory and remembrance of Krishna did not slacken. So he exhibited ecstatic symptoms, and seeing these ecstatic symptoms, Vidura could understand how exalted Uddhava was. So Uddhava began speaking. After one muhurta of silence and trance, Uddhava began speaking. He said, "The son of the world, Krishna, had said, what can I speak about our welfare?" So Krishna is considered sun. Krishna's appearance is like sunrise. Krishna's disappearance is like sunset. So it's often compared like that. So when sun sets, thieves and rogues become prominent. Similarly, when Krishna disappears, so many miscreants and wrong religious principles, irreligion will spread. So these are certain disadvantages. On the other hand, Krishna is not affected by his disappearance. Just like sun, when he disappears today, he will appear tomorrow. Again, sun sets today, he will rise in some other hemisphere. Similarly, Krishna also, when he ends his pastimes in one universe, he will begin those pastimes in the next universe. And within the same universe also, he can come in the next day of Brahma. So like that. So Krishna is not affected, but devotees are affected. So Uddhava says that how Vidus were so unfortunate, just like a fish considers moon also as ordinary, because moon and fish came from the same source, which is the ocean. So they felt, Yadus felt that Krishna is one amongst them. So this is one of the reasons why Krishna enacted this Moshala Leela in the 11th canto. Because some of the Yadus were becoming very whimsical because of their close connection with Krishna. So they could not actually appreciate Krishna's exalted position, some of them. So that is one of the reasons. So there are so many other reasons for Moshala Leela. We will discuss in 11th canto. So later, although Yadus were unaffected, some of the Yadus were misunderstanding Krishna's position, still in this context Uddhava says that pure devotees are not affected by the words of those who are influenced by illusory energy. Devasya maya sprishta echanya dasadashritaha bhramyate dhirna tadvakyer atmanyuttatmanoharo. So the Lord removed his form from the vision of those who haven't performed sufficient tapasya. So like that, Uddha. So this verse comes as Uddhava is remembering Yadu's way of dealing with Krishna. Krishna, although he is exalted super soul of every living entity, Yadus could not understand his glory. So in that context he just puts this verse. So generally pure devotees are not affected. So actually, according to Jiva Goswami, Yadus taking Krishna not so seriously is only at their apparent behavior. So what exactly Krishna thought was, if I disappear, it's like apparently to the world, Yadus would become whimsical because of their close connection with Krishna. Familiarity breeds contempt. But the internal reason is, if Krishna disappears, Yadus would feel so much of intense separation from Krishna, and they would not be able to survive, and they would trample the whole earth out of that viraha. That's why Krishna had to enact this Moshala Leela. So internal reasons are that Yadus are very exalted. But externally it is presented that Yadus became whimsical. Right? So although so many such opinions, apparent opinions may be presented, just like it is said that because of Gandhari's curse, Yadu dynasty got annihilated. Because of sages' curse, Yadu's dynasty got annihilated. So these are all reasons for the outside world. But devotees are never affected. Devotees know the internal reason. So how can Yadus be? Actually, some of the Yadus were the descendants of demigods. Right? When the Moshala Leela happened, all the portions of the demigods, so they got separated from Yadus and went and resumed their original positions as demigods, controllers of the universe. And Yadus were actually eternal companions of Krishna, right? Dwarkavasis, eternal Dwarkavasis. So there could be hundreds of other opinions, but devotees do not get affected. So next verse is Krishna's bewildering nature. Yanmartya lelopaikam swayoga mayabalam darshayata grihitam vismapanam swasyacha sobhagarde parampadam bhushana bhushanangam. So Lord's pastimes can even mesmerize his own incarnations, like Vishnu, right? He is the ornament of all ornaments. So like that, Uddhava remembers so many such wonderful attributes of Krishna, and how Yadus were, how Krishna was remembered by the gopis so fondly. Yasyanu raga pluta hasa rasa alila valoka pratilabdhamana. Right, vrajastriyo drugbhir anupravitta dhiyovatashta kila kritya sesha. So when all these gopis were doing their household activities also, they were disturbed by the thoughts of Krishna. While we are chanting, we are disturbed by so many other thoughts, but they were disturbed from their household duties because of Krishna's remembrance. So then Krishna's bewildering behavior is remembered by our Uddhava. He says, Krishna takes birth and then goes to someone else's house. Vidambanam yad Vasudeva gehe. He took birth in Vasudeva's house and then he's shifting to someone else's house. And he would come and beg forgiveness from his parents, "Oh, I could not protect you, my dear parents." Like that he would beg forgiveness. All these are little surprising and bewildering and astonishing. So like that, he remembers so many other verses and how Krishna killed Shishupala and gave him liberation, right? So who can tolerate separation from such a devotee, such a exalted Krishna? Like that he says. So then this beautiful verse comes. Krishna is so merciful that he would even give liberation and Swarupa to those who are fighting on behalf of Kauravas against his own devotees. So just by allowing them to die in front of him, he actually benefited them. Tathaiva chanye naraloka veera ya ahave Krishna mukharavindam netraihi pivanto nayanabhiramam parthastraputaha padamapurasya. So on being purified by the arrows of Arjuna. So they are, all these soldiers were purified by the glances of Krishna, by taking darshan of Krishna at the time of death, and also the arrows of a pure devotee. So Prabhupada in that context writes that pure devotee's arrow is also very powerful. So Lord is the master of all three. These are all wonderful series of verses. So Triadhisha. There are different types of trees. Okay, now you tell me, quiz. This is our, no? Your team. Triadhisha. What is Triadhisha? Okay, what are the three pairs of opulences? No, what are the other things? One is three pairs of opulences. Master of three modes. Three Purushas. Okay, anyways, they have mentioned quite a lot. So that's why he is called Triadhisha, master of all threes. It is painful to remember the Lord submitting explanations before Ugrasena. So he would, he is the one who reinstated Ugrasena on the throne, and he would go and submit, "Oh, what can I do? This is what has happened there." So like that, as a submissive subordinate to Ugrasena, he would speak. So aho bakiyam sanakala kutam jigham sayapaya edapya sadhvi lebhe gatim dhatrichitam tatonyam kamva dayalum sharanam vrajayama. So this is another wonderful verse that is very favorite of Sukadeva Goswami also. So next, all the Vrajabhumi pastimes, how his birth was bewildering, how his transfer from this place to Vrindavan, that was bewildering, he explained. Now he is remembering all the pastimes at Vrajabhumi. Right? So these are all list of pastimes. Vasudeva brought the Lord from Vrindavan in fear of Kamsa. Lord performed so many pastimes with the calves and the gopas and the gopis. He subdued Kaliya and he killed so many other demons. He lifted Govardhan. He protected Vrajavasis from the wrath of Indra. And after summarizing Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, he would come to Mathura. So in Mathura, Krishna killed all these wrestlers, Kovalya Pida and Kamsa finally. And he went to the school of Sandipan Muni along with Balramji. And there they learned all the arts. He learned 64 arts in just 64 days. He mastered that art within one day, each art. And how he married so many queens. First he married Rukmani by kidnapping, right? And he subdued seven bulls and married Nagnajiti. And he also brought Parijata tree for Satyabhama. When she complained that you gave a gift of Parijata flower to Rukmani, right? What about me? And I'll give you tree. Why flower? He brought it. And also he killed Bhomasura, Narakasura, both are same. And he also married 16,100 princesses who were in the captivity of Bhaumasur. So like that, Krishna then also killed, arranged for the killing of Kalayavana through Muchukunda. And Muchukunda offered beautiful prayers. This comes in the 10th canto. Then Krishna arranged for the killing of so many warriors, miscreants. Many miscreants were there on the battle of Kurukshetra. And he did it just like a forest fire is caused by the friction of bamboos, and that friction of bamboos happens by the influence of wind. Krishna acted like a wind only and brought bamboos together and then caused friction and forest fire happened. So he just arranged that so many armies came together on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they fought amongst themselves and then they died. But Krishna was just playing the role of chariot driver only, nothing beyond that. He didn't take up a weapon, he didn't kill any of them. Then Krishna considered this Yadu dynasty a burden on earth. So in this context Prabhupada writes that actually Yadus were dear associates of the Lord, they can never be burden for earth. So there is burden of love, there is burden of beast. So mother may find the child heavy, but still she will carry the child because there is love, right? So a woman may find the ornaments heavy, but still she will wear the ornaments because there is affection for the ornaments, for gold. So similarly, it's a happy burden for Mother Earth to have Yadus on her surface, but because of so many other reasons, Krishna had to wind up those pastimes. Moshala Leela. They were drunk and they took canes and fought amongst themselves. Krishna Balaram were also. Right? They were also beating other Yadus. There are demigod portions. So apparently to the eyes of this materialistic world, they fought amongst themselves like this with canes and they died. But internally what was happening was, all the eternal associates of Krishna went back to eternal Dwarkadham and all the demigod portions of the Yadus went back to their demigod administrative posts. Uddhava went to Badrikashram. Uddhava story I'll tell you. Okay, now only I'll tell you because now you asked. So at the end of Krishna's life, incarnation, manifest pastimes, towards the end, all the demigods came to Dwaraka and told Krishna, the purpose for which you have descended has been fulfilled. So if you wish, you may please go back. Demigods requested him. So Krishna said, yes, I'll do the needful. So Uddhava came to know about this. He heard the conversation. Then he came to Krishna and said, my dear Krishna, I'm feeling too much separation from you. I won't be able to survive without you. So I came to know that you are going back to your eternal abode. Please also take me along with you. Then Krishna says, you are as good as me, so you cannot come back with me. So I have given my association to so many people in this world. Right? I was in Mathura, Vrindavan, Dwaraka, Hastinapur and so many other places. But I could never go to Badrikashram. So the sages at Badrikashram, Hari Bol Mahabhagatru Ki Jai. The sages at Badrikashram did not get my association. So you are as good as me, my dear Uddhava. You can go to Badrikashram on my behalf and give them my association. You are as good as me. So he told like that. And to pacify Uddhava, Krishna gave 23 chapters of Uddhava Gita. 11th canto, 7th chapter till 29th chapter is Uddhava Gita. So all the 23, the longest philosophical episode in the entire Bhagavatam was spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. So this all happened in Dwaraka. No. This is in Dwaraka. 11th canto Uddhava Gita happened in Dwaraka. After Krishna's meeting with Yadus, Krishna's meeting with the demigods. So now Krishna dispatched Uddhava. So Uddhava was going towards Badrikashram. He was traveling. Meanwhile, Krishna went to the Yadus and said, we have been cursed by the sages. Right? We have to do some rituals and purify ourselves. Let's go to Prabhasa Kshetra. Right? Let's do some charity and sacrifices and other things to purify ourselves. So Krishna encouraged all the Yadus. So all the Yadus went. We want to attend. Okay. So all the Yadus went to Prabhasa Kshetra and this Moshala Leela happened there at Prabhasa Kshetra. Getting a sequence of events, you got it? First demigod meeting Krishna, then Uddhava's meeting with Krishna, Uddhava Gita. These two incidents happened at Dwaraka. Then Uddhava was travelling to Badrikashram. Then all the Yadus went to Prabhasa Kshetra and Moshala Leela. This inhalation of Yadu dynasty had happened. I'll come to it. So after that happened, Krishna was alone sitting under a banyan tree. after all the Yadus got annihilated, even Balram also went, Krishna was alone sitting under that banyan tree, Ashwatha Vriksha. Balram also completed his manifest pastimes. He went back to the original abode. So when Krishna was sitting there, Uddhava, what he was doing? He was travelling to Badrikashram. On the way, he could not move ahead. He was feeling so much separation from Krishna, he turned back and came back to this Prabhasakshatra, where Krishna was sitting under banyan tree. So under banyan tree, Krishna was sitting and Uddhava came and said, I am unable to move ahead, I am feeling so much separation from you. Then Krishna gives one more set of teachings, not 23 chapters, just few verses. That is Krishna's Paramam Sthitim, transcendental situation of Krishna, which was more confidential than Chatushloki Bhagavatam. So when Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, Maitreya comes there and he hears the whole conversation. After this, after Maitreya comes, then Uddhava was travelling towards Badrikashram. Then at Yamuna, Vidura comes. That is third kind of first chapter. So then Vidura asks him, Vidura, this whole conversation happens and Vidura asks him, you please accept me as your disciple. Then he says, Maitreya also had that knowledge from me when Krishna was speaking to me. So you better talk to him. I have a service. What service? I will go to Badrikashram. I also have service. So many calls are coming. So, Maryada Vatikram, correct. So, after Uddhava left Vidura, he directed him to Maitreya and Uddhava went to Badrikashram. So this is the whole sequence of events. So first 11th canto 6th chapter happened, then 11th canto 7 to 29 happened. 11th canto 6th chapter is meeting between demigods and Krishna. 11th canto 7th chapter till 29th chapter is meeting between Uddhava and Krishna. And 11th canto 1st chapter is annihilation of Yadus. 1st and 30, 31, all that is annihilation of Yadus. So after that happened 3.4. After that happened 3.1. After that happened 4th canto, 3rd canto 6th chapter till 4th canto 31st chapter. After 4th canto 31st chapter, 1st canto 13th chapter happened. So this is the chronology of Bhagavatam. So lesson is more important than chronology. Now we'll come to this. So now you asked one question, I went somewhere else. Right? So that's how Bhagavatam also is. Right? I am in 3rd canto, 3rd chapter, 6th verse. You asked me something related to 11th canto. Like that. So Krishna, how he lived as a prince in Dwaraka, that is explained. Then how he protected the embryo of Uttara from the weapon of Ashwatthama, how he had this household life with Rukmini and so many other queens. So all these beautiful examples are given by Uddhava. And he comes to the point of this Maushalya Leela. So once the young princess of Yadu dynasty, they were making some fun of the sages, like Narada Muni. So this is also, we need to understand, this is the will of the Lord. Because how can the descendants of the Lord himself insult the sages? It is not possible. Right? But this happened only by the will of the Lord. Because Lord wanted to give a lesson to the people in this world that even if it is my own family members, I cannot tolerate an insult towards my devotees. So Narada Muni and all these sages were my devotees. How can my own descendants like Samba and other people just mock these sages? They just dressed one boy like a girl and asked the sages, you know astrology, can you tell, will this girl give birth to a boy or girl? But actually he's a boy. So the sages said, she will give birth to a Mushalam, right, an iron, lump of iron. So then Ugrasena was told. Actually, he gives a birth to iron, right? Iron club. So Gurusena said, you can just powder that iron club and make it powder and put it in ocean. So that's what they did. And once you just scrub it and then make chandan out of it, na, thoda chandan yatra mein, right? When you are grinding chandan, some small tukda remains. You can't grind it anymore. You'll have to grind that along with your finger. So people will keep it aside. Similarly, a bit was remaining, so they just left it. So that bit was caught by Jara, right? So Jara attached that iron bit to his arrow and then threw it. Then it hit Krishna's leg. So to the eyes of this materialistic world, people thought that Krishna died because of the arrow of Jara. Pranavarta attacked, Potana attacked, Sakatasura attacked, Krishna did not die. How can he die when he is grown up, 125-year-old Krishna? How can he die with an arrow, one small arrow? There is not a big battle also. So that is totally illogical. But materialistic people will think like that. That's why this beautiful verse comes. Devasya maya sprishta yechanya dasadashritaha. Right? Bhramyate dhirnatadvakyair atmanyaptatmanoharo. Devotees' minds or intelligence will not get bewildered by this kind of misinterpretations and misunderstandings. People will think that Lord Ram committed suicide in Sarayu River. Right? Krishna was murdered by Jara's arrow. So these are the opinions of people. So, but devotees are not bewildered. So this entire Maushalya Leela is explained, and how all these Yadus, they were Yadus were annihilated amongst themselves. That's a ghastly disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. So then this whole scene, as a reply to your question, I answered all this, I explained all this events. So Krishna was sitting in four-handed form in under banyan tree, and Uddhava came there. So later Maitreya also joined there, and Krishna spoke that Paramam Sthitim to him. And after this Uddhava goes into remembrance of another series of verses that are explaining the bewildering nature of Krishna. Karmanyani hasya bhavo bhavasyate durgashrayothari bhayat palayanam kalatmano yat pramadayitashramah svatman rati khidyati dhirvidamiha. So this is another beautiful verse, you know the meaning. So yeah, this is all slight Uddhava Gita review. Then Vidura seeks spiritual knowledge from Uddhava, like following this Maryada Vyatikrama principle. Uddhava says you can take lessons from Maitreya. So Maitreya, Vidura goes to Maitreya. And at some point, Uddhava also informs Vidura that Krishna remembered you when he was departing. Then Vidura was overwhelmed. Oh, Krishna remembered me. Right? That shows his humility also. So now third canto, fifth chapter begins with Maitreya and Vidura's meeting. So as soon as Vidura met Maitreya Rishi, so Vidura is already perfect devotee. He approached Maitreya Muni and inquired from him. So in this purport, Prabhupada elaborates on how opportunity to hear Krishna Katha is very rare. So Vidura, he underwent so much of political experience, right, throughout his life. And after spending whole life in these political affairs and then management and other things, finally at the end of his life, he got this opportunity to hear Bhagavatam. That only two cantos, not 12 cantos. so that's how it is rare to get an opportunity to hear Krishna Katha. So we are extremely fortunate, by the mercy of Prabhupada, we are getting to hear every day. So next, after he goes, Vidura, although he is a very exalted soul, he doesn't ask some esoteric questions to Maitreya. He asks some simple questions that are very much relevant for a common man. Sukhaya karmani karoti loko natai sukham vanya duparamamba vindeta bhuya tatayeva dukham yadatra yuktam bhagavan vadinnaha. So in this material world, people perform so many activities for happiness. And in return, what do they get? They don't get happiness, they get distress, and they cannot mitigate their distress also, right? And their unhappiness increases. So, what is the use of their endeavor? Yadatra yuktam bhagavan vadenaha. Please give a solution for this whole, you know, affair, right, that he is undergoing. So that shows Vidura's humility and also compassion, because he is compassionate to these conditioned souls who are suffering in this material world. And not only that, he is putting himself in the garb of a common man and asking a question that is relevant for him, apparently. I cannot ask about the esoteric leelas of Krishna. I should first ask, how do I come out of this distress? So like that, Vidura showed his humility as an ordinary person. Then he says, he glorifies Maitreya, saying that people like you are very compassionate. Janasya Krishna vimukhasya daivat adharma seelasya sudukhitasya anugrahaye hacharanti nunam bhutani bhavyani janardanasya. So people like you are great philanthropic souls who travel only to benefit people in general, right? They are vimukhasya daivat. They have turned their face against Krishna. They have become adharma seelasya, very irreligious. So sudukhitasya, they are in distress. So to show anugraha on them, we travel. So like that, he glorifies Vidura, glorifies Maitreya in so many ways, and asks several questions. That these questions are about Purushavatara, about Virat Rupa, about Leelavataras, about living conditions in various planets and other living creatures, etc. And Maitreya Muni might ask, Vidura, you have asked so many questions, where should I begin? So again, towards the end of that whole question series, he says, I don't want any social or political topics, right? I just want to hear pure Krishna Katha. This verse that Gauram Prabhu often quotes, Paravaresham Bhagavan Ratani Shritanime Vyasa Mukhad Abhikshnam Atrupnuma Kshulla Sukhavahanam Tesham Rite Krishna Katha Murugavad. So I have had enough of Mahabharata. I have been a part of that Mahabharata also. I don't want to hear any Mahabharata. I want to hear Bhagavatam. So, and there is a series of verses that Vidura speaks about glories of Krishna Katha, expressing his exclusive interest in Krishna Katha only. Kastrupnaya tirthapadobhidana chatreshiva suribhiridyamana yakarnanadim purushasya yato bhava pradam geharatim chinatti. So, if Krishna Katha enters the ear holes of a person, his attachment towards household life is diminished. And why the attachment for household life is not beneficial for a person? Because bhava pradam, it avoids material existence, right? It allows one to continue in this material existence, like that. So there are so many other beautiful verses glorifying Krishna's katha. Is another beautiful verse. Tadasya kausharava sarmadatur kareh kathameva kathasusaram udhrutya pushpebhya iva artabandho shivayana kirtaya tirtha kirte. So kirtaya tirtha kirte means Lord's glories are also considered holy places of pilgrimage. So kareh kathameva kathasusaram, just like honey is the essence of the flower, similarly there are millions of topics in this world. The essence of all topics is Krishna katha. Hare katham eva kathasusaram udhrutya pushpebhya eva artabandho. Oh friend of distressed, just like honey bee collects honey from flowers, similarly you collect the essence of all topics and speak to me hari katha. So then Vidura describes, Maitreya Muni describes the whole Purushavataras. He begins with Purushavataras, and before that Maitreya Muni also honored Vidura. So Vidura says, I want to know about Krishna and his incarnations, Purushavataras, etc. Now Maitreya Muni says, your questions are so glorious. By asking these questions, you have shown your mercy to me and to the people in general also. So here is an exemplary speaker of the Bhagavatam, that he is giving so much of respect to the hearer also. He is not having any pride that, oh, this fellow doesn't know, he came to me to learn. He is not exhibiting that pride. Rather, he says, because of him, because of his inquisitiveness to know Krishna Katha, I am getting an opportunity to remember Krishna and speak about Krishna. So he is making me Krishna conscious. He is giving me an opportunity to be Krishna conscious for this whatever, two cantos of time. Similarly, we also need to take lesson from Maitreya. So the power of glorious questions is explained by Prabhupada in the purport also. So after glorifying Vidura for his questions, Maitreya Muni also says, it's not a wonder that you are asking this kind of question, because you are born of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is so glorious, the son of Vyasadeva also has to be glorious. And not only you are Vyasadeva in this world, in this birth, you are actually Yamaraj, such a pure devotee, one of the Mahajans. So, for your good self, Lord left instructions with me, I will speak whatever I have heard from the Lord. Then, he begins about the Purusha Avataras. So, before entering the technical details of how this creation takes place, how Lord Mahavishnu creates this material universe, Maitreya Muni gives the purpose behind this creation. And Prabhupada brilliantly elaborates the purpose of Krishna behind this material creation, that is compassion. So Prabhupada says that it's only because of Lord's compassion that he takes this trouble of creating this material world again and again and again. That is, giving the living entity another opportunity, more and more opportunities to come back to Godhead. You have exercised sufficiently your mentality of controllership and masterhood in this material world, artificially. Right, now I am giving you one more opportunity in this world. Take shelter of scriptures, take shelter of my incarnations, take shelter of my devotees and come back to me. So basically, one more creation means one more installment of Lord's mercy on the conditioned soul to rectify his rebellious mentality. So, and he explains this whole creation process, where Mahavishnu glances on the material nature with Kala, Karma and Swabhava of the living entities. And initially that material nature is like Pradhana, a seed form where modes are not active. But by Lord's glance, that Pradhana gets transformed into Mahatattva, and that Mahatattva gets transformed into Ahankara. And that Ahankara in three modes will give rise to all these 23 elements. Right? You know all this process. And this false ego is the root of this entire material creation. Everything began from there. That false ego manifested in three modes, and further elements are manifesting, and they combine with each other and they form various bodies and various objects in this world. So Prabhupada writes a brilliant point there. We may think that we are being pressurized by so many people in this world, but actually the maximum pressure that is given to us is from the false ego. False ego, the real pressure on people is coming from false ego. So we are being pressurized by the false ego to act in a way that is not suitable for us. When are we supposed to pressurize? When will someone pressurize us? When we don't want to do something and when they want us to do that. Both pressure dal rahe. So we say like that, right? So because we don't want to do it, and he is coming and pushing me to do it. So that's why we are saying that he is pressurizing me. But if you like some activity and if someone comes and says, we readily agree, there is no pressure there. There is pleasure. But actually false ego is pressurizing us to act against our innate nature. What is our innate nature? To be the servant of the servant of Krishna. So that is the innate nature of the soul. And false ego is pressurizing us to act against that innate nature. So, now, in the context of false ego, Prabhupada explains that. And also another beautiful point in this creation process is, all the physical elements, they get transformed. Right? So false ego is mixed with the material nature and Lord's glance and time. So mode will mix, or earth will mix, so it's an element will mix to give rise to some other elements. So that whole creation chart is there, right? How different gross elements manifest from one another. First there is sound, then sky comes, and that from that comes form, then comes fire. So like that entire chart is there. So in that context, Prabhupada writes, Everything happens by the touch of the Lord. All these transformations are coming. Sound is transforming into sky. Sky is getting transformed into form and fire, etc., etc. Finally, water and earth. So all these transformations are happening only by Lord's glance. Just like Mahaprabhu paints, the deity, right? He painted our Mahaprabhu, Sri Gauranga. So to get one color, he may have to mix different colors, right? So the base colors are there. So he has to mix. Oh, this is dark green. So he was showing me like fluorescent green, right? So later he made it little lighter, fainter green, so that it doesn't hit the eye so much. So the painter has to mix different colors in different proportions to bring out new colors. Similarly, the elements seem to be transforming from one element to another element, but Lord's glance is there. Colors themselves cannot mix with each other and then bring out new colors. Painter has to do it. Similarly, elements themselves cannot reproduce new elements. Lord's intervention has to be there. So Lord's final touch is the reason for any newer manifestation. So after all these elements got manifested, then the personified elements or the presiding deities of those elements started offering prayers to the Lord. So these prayers are some of the beautiful prayers in the third canto. This is Namama Te Deva Padaravindam Prapanna Tapopa Shamata Patram Yan Mola Keta Yatayonjasoru Samsara Dukham Bahirukshipanti. So we offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet, which is like umbrella. Prapanna Tapopa Shamata Patram. Whoever has surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord, Lord's lotus feet will act as umbrella. Umbrella from what? To save one from miseries. Tapopa Shamata Patram. So just like when rain comes, umbrella will protect you from water. Similarly, when miseries are coming, Lord's lotus feet, shelter of Lord's lotus feet will protect you from that. So like that, there is a series of beautiful prayers. Dhatar Yadasmin. Then Marganti Yatte Mukhapadmanide. So each verse will take 3 hours. So we have to move ahead. Then Vishvasya Janmasthiti Samyamarthe. So Tanena Te Deva Katha Sudhaya Pravruddha Bhaktya Vishadashaya. So this is about Krishna Katha. Okay, that is about the prayers of the demigods. When the demigods offer prayers, demigods means the elemental devatas, the devatas are presiding deities of all these elements. When they offered prayers to the Lord, Lord reciprocated with those prayers. How? By sending his cohesive energy. So at this point of the creation, you saw the whole creation chart, all the 23 elements were loose. Earth is different, fire is different, water is different, form is different. You can't understand. How can they differently exist? Our bodies are combination of earth, water, fire, air, ether. All sense objects are there. But all of them are existing separately. How do they look like? Don't ask me. So the presiding deities are offering prayers to the Lord. So unless they combine with each other, different forms like this will not manifest. So we learn such wonderful lessons from their prayers that all these demigods were expressing their willingness to serve Krishna. They say, my dear Lord, because we are separated from each other, because we are unable to combine with each other, we are unable to serve you. The purpose of our existence is to serve you. You have created we, material elements. You have created us. We are material elements. We are supposed to combine with each other and form this universe and form various bodies within this universe so that the purpose of your creation of the universe will be fulfilled. Unless we combine, how will your purpose be fulfilled? So the purpose of our existence is to serve you. But we are unable to serve you because we are not together. We are separate from each other. Similarly, when we don't mix with each other, when we don't cooperate with each other, when we don't combine with each other, service will not progress. Right? They are teaching a wonderful lesson of cooperation. And when we come together, sometimes the immature sadhaka may have his ulterior motives of, I want to be the prominent person in this team. For example, this body is there, it is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. 5 people, just for namesake, So five people, five team members came together to form one project of this body. So now in this body, earth element is more than other elements. In some other material bodies, fire element is more than other elements. In some other bodies, water element is, water content is more than other elements. So in every project, everybody cannot be the lead. One person cannot lead every project, right? Every service. When the team comes together, depending on the skill set and the need of the service, one person takes lead, other people may have to maintain low profile. Now, if the other elements say, we will not cooperate with you, in the human body, earth element is more, right? Other elements will say, go out, right? We will not come to you. Then how will human body be formed? So they are serving as per the requirement of their role, right? They are not fighting with each other. If we cooperate and then take whatever role Krishna has given us, so we will best serve him in that role, and in some other service I will get another role, right? My purpose of existence is to serve whatever role Krishna gives, how much ever role Krishna gives. So they are all willing to do it. And the creation began with this cooperation amongst the elements. But when after the creation takes place, that cooperation misses. Right? People start fighting with each other. Right? Understand, see your own body, how different elements are cooperating with each other. Right? To form your own body. So within this body, because of bodily conception, I don't cooperate with others. Like that. And why all these elements were trying to cooperate with each other and then form bodies? They say that we want to form grains, we want to form so many bodies of living creatures, we want to form so many planets and so many other geographical units within this universe, so that all this can be a sacrifice to you, offering to you. So when devotees come together and form something and make something, make some work, do some project or whatever, do some service, that is supposed to be an offering for the pleasure of Krishna. Prabhupada's purports in this 3.5 later chapters are like brilliant, right? If we just see that, we can maintain our consciousness in our various services properly, right? So they say that we want to render service and give that as an offering to you, right? So the end result is we want to please Krishna. Whatever it takes for me to please Krishna, I will do. That willingness is exhibited by these elements, and they are willing to cooperate and combine with each other. Right? We want to combine with each other in different proportions. So then Lord sends his Bibhrat Shakti. So you know the entire technical process of how when Lord sent his cohesive energy, all the elements amalgamated with each other, and they were there for 1,000 years. Then the gigantic Virat Roop manifested, and all the demigod abodes are being created, apertures are being created, all the demigods are taking their places in various limbs of the Virat Roop, right? So that's a technical explanation. So in this overview class, I want to highlight the flow and very important lessons, not so many technical details. So there are 10 kinds of life air. So after this, this whole description of universal form. So universal form has different descriptions, right? Sometimes universal form is described as the limbs of universal form are compared to various varnas. Sometimes the limbs of universal form are compared to various planetary systems. Sometimes the limbs of universal form are compared to various abodes of different demigods. So there are different ways in which universal form is explained. It's basically a conceptualization to bring a neophyte personality to make him believe that God exists. What he says, he cannot perceive anything beyond his material senses. What he sees with his material senses is this world. Now you show him how this mountain is there, that is the bone of the Lord. These trees are there, they are hairs of the Lord. So like that, when you present this, what he can see, when you relate what he can see with the body of the Lord, then he will understand, oh, there is some God beyond my perception also. So after saying all the technical details of universal form, Maitreya Muni says, actually I don't have a proper understanding of it. Okay, I cannot completely explain this universal form. It's a very tough subject matter. Whatever I know, I explain. So like that, he says. Then he says, even if I don't know completely, still I will speak. Whatever I know. Because if I don't speak, the power of my speech will remain unchecked. Tathapi kirtayam yanga yathamati yathashrutam. So that verse comes. After that, his conviction about speaking Krishna Katha is revealed. Ekantalabham vachasonupumsam shishlokamauler gunavadamahu sritesya vidvadhirupakritayam kathasudhayam upasamprayogam. Yeah, that verse also we kept. So, that's how the 6th chapter ends. Now in the 7th chapter, Vidura asks so many other questions. Right? First he begins with some questions about Jiva and Ishvara. First he says, Lord is so self-satisfied, spiritual Lord, how can there be a connection with the material modes and their activities? Now in the creation process, he has heard that Lord is there, from the Lord only this Mahatattva is coming and the modes are manifesting, etc. It apparently seems that Lord is connected with the modes. How can the all spiritual Lord be connected with material modes? First question. Second question. There is soul, Jiva, his pure spirit soul. How can he be entangled in science? How can he be entangled in matter? How can the pure spirit soul be entangled in material body? This is spirit, this is material. How can there be the connection? And on top of it, along with this, the soul in the body, there is super soul also living. How can the soul undergo so many difficulties in the presence of super soul? For example, king is right there, sitting on the throne. In front of the king only, the citizen who is under the king's protection is being beaten up by some enemy, by some other third party. How can that be possible? Material nature is beating up the soul thoroughly, who is actually part and parcel of Krishna, when Krishna is directly present there in the form of super soul. So these are certain questions that Vidura asked. Then Maitreya Muni answered. First he says, if someone thinks that Lord is overcome by illusion, if the Lord is having any connection with the material modes, etc., that is beyond logic only. It doesn't exist. Etad ishanam ishasya prakritisthopi tadgunai nayujyate sadatmaster yatha buddhi tadashraya. This is the divinity of the Lord. So although he is in touch with the material modes, still he is unaffected by the material modes. If one thinks that Lord is connected with the material modes, Lord is influenced by the material modes, he is only in illusion. So first he says, first question, he just immediately dismisses that question. Right? This is against logic. Second question, he gives an analogy. If someone's head is cut off, how can someone see that his head is cut off? If his head is cut off, he cannot see. He has no eyes to see. But this will happen in a dream. In a dream, one may see that his head is being cut off. Otherwise, he cannot see. Similarly, spirit soul cannot be associated with material body. But it happens in a dream. Means all of us are dreaming now. This is a dreamy state. So we are in illusion. So the connection between the material body and the spirit soul exists as long as the jiva identifies with the material body. Misidentification. That misidentification is a dream in this analogy. So it's only our misidentification that is making us think that we are this material bodies. As long as one is giving up, one has given up this material identification with the material body, he is directly connected with the Lord. He is situated in his original constitutional position as servant of Krishna. That another example comes in the 4th canto, where this coconut is there. Coconut, when it becomes so dry, the inside pulp gets detached from the outside shell. You can do like this and then you can hear and the inside thing is moving. Similarly, a pure devotee has developed such deep connection with Krishna, he detaches himself from the spirits, from the material body, right? But a neophyte person, he is attached, closely attached to the soul. So now sometimes you break the coconut in South India, Every day in some temple, people will break coconuts. They will bring back their cut coconut. Half coconut will go to the pujari there. Half coconut they will bring back home. If that is so new and fresh thing, you cannot take it out. Right? With a knife, you cannot separate the coconut pulp from the coconut shell. That it's so thick. That is bodily conception. Someone trying to remove that will break his knife or cut his hand. Right? Someone will directly bite it, try to just scrap it. So like that, all that will happen. So that is because of misidentification. So the solution is bhakti. If you perform bhakti, you will give up this misidentification. So when the senses are satisfied in the super soul, all miseries are vanquished. Ashesha sanklesha samam vidhakte gunanuvada sravanam murare kimva punastat charanaravinda paraga seva ratiratma labdha. So ashesha sanklesha samam vidhakte. From millions of miseries that a conditioned soul might undergo, he will get mitigation. Right? Ashesha sanklesha. It's not that one misery is coming, you can come out of this misery easily. Not like that. Gunanuvada sravanam murare. Krishna katha is so potent that it can mitigate millions of miseries. If that is the potency of just hearing about Krishna, what to speak of serving Krishna? So service is one step ahead of sravanam also. Right? Seva is one step ahead of sravanam also. But to do that seva in proper consciousness, one needs to equip oneself with sravanam. Right? So both should go on parallelly in our neophyte stage. One has sufficiently equipped himself with sravanam, he can render the service with proper consciousness. Kim va punastat charanaravinda paraga seva ratiratma labdha. So here the fortune of a person who is serving is not mentioned. The fortune of a person who has developed taste for serving is mentioned. Kim va punastat charanaravinda paraga seva ratiratma labdha. He has developed an inclination, a willingness, an attitude to render service. So service is different from service attitude. Service attitude is more important and more nourishing than the physical service that we render. If one has service attitude, service will automatically manifest. Right? So attitude is more important than magnitude, because when one has attitude, magnitude will automatically manifest. If one focuses only on the magnitude, oh, I want to do this much service, right, and show off that I can accomplish a lot. If attitude is very poor, its gadi will not run for long. Once Gauranga Prabhu gave an example in our opt meeting. In those days, I was in opt also. First 1 year, guest department. He said, if the mind is applying brakes and if the body is pressing accelerator, how long the vehicle will move ahead? Right, body may be pressing accelerator. Externally we are serving, but mind may, something is there. We are not convinced that, hey, how do I do this service? Should I do this service or not? Should I do? Should he do? So when all these doubts are killing the mind of a person, the apparent activity of service will not last for a long time. So this is about service. Now Vidura shares his heartfelt realizations with Maitreya. He says, my dear Maitreya, you have wonderfully described the position of Jiva and position of Ishvara. These are the two questions he asked, right? So I am very happy. Now, I arthabhavam vinischitya pratitasya binatmanah tam chapa yushmat charana sevahyaham paranude. Now, I have understood theoretically the actual position of a soul and the Supreme Lord. I got only theory. I have some intellectual understanding of this, but I don't have conviction. I don't have realization of it. Right? This fact that you have spoken, I could understand, I could make sense out of it. I understand that it is correct, but to internalize this, I have to render service unto you. If one renders service to a pure devotee, his knowledge will become realization. Otherwise, without service, knowledge will remain knowledge. That's why studying Bhagavatam is at one level, rendering service is on another level. Because by rendering service, we will assimilate the teachings of Bhagavatam better. Right? That's what Vidura is saying. I am not saying. Yudhishthira says, by serving pure devotees like you, my knowledge will convert into realization. Next. Yatsevaya bhagavatah kotasthasya madhudvishah ratiraso bhavetivra padayor vyasanardhanah. So yatsevaya bhagavatah. Yatsevaya here is referring to the previous verse. By serving whom? Who is that? Pure devotees. By serving pure devotees, then bhagavatah kotasthasya madhudvishah ratiraso. Only by rendering pure devotees, my knowledge will convert into realization and I will develop some attachment to Krishna. Ratiraso bhavet tivra. Right? So that service to a pure devotee is extremely rare. Somewhere in this series, another verse should come. 20th verse. I didn't put the verse here. Durapahi alpatapasa seva vaikuntha vartmasu yatropagiyate nityam devadevo janardhanah. So such service to pure souls is very rare. So these three verses are very important. 18th verse. 18th verse says, only by service I will convert my knowledge into realization. 19th verse says, only by such service I will develop some attachment to Krishna. 20th verse says, one who is not fortunate enough, one who doesn't have sufficient austerity, pious credits or whatever, cannot obtain the service of pure devotees. Of course, when you say durapahi alpatapasa, alpatapasa means meager in austerity. That doesn't mean austerity is a qualification to achieve devotee service. It's a generic sense, conventional way. Right? Me bahut punya kiya isile this happened to me. One may say like that. That doesn't actually mean that because of one's material punya, material piety, he got an opportunity to render service to spiritual Lord. It's not like that. It's a general conventional way of saying it. So one need not think that, oh, I should do some tapasya for 1,000 years, then only I will get association of pure devotees. Not necessarily. Okay, that's very rare. Then Vidura asks more details. And the rest of the chapter, second half of the chapter, is filled with Vidura's, you know, hundreds of questions. Not hundreds, some 20-21 questions he asks. So please explain to me specific powers and divisions, all this. This series of questions. Next, 8th chapter. In the 8th chapter, Maitreya Muni says, he answers the second verse of the 5th chapter, which Vidura asked, in the second verse of the 8th chapter. What is the second verse of 5th chapter? Sukhaya karmani karoti loko. What is the answer to that? Quiz. Soham runam kshulla sukhaya dukham mahaggatanam viramayatasya pravartaye bhagavatam puranam yadaha sakshad bhagavan rishubhya. So, you asked for a solution for the miseries of living entities. The solution for those miseries is bhagavatam. Right? Soham runam kshulla sukhaya dukham. For a meager amount of happiness, people are undergoing tremendous amount of distress. To mitigate that distress, I am speaking Bhagavat Purana, which is spoken by the Lord to the sages. And he gives the whole series, the parampara of Bhagavatam. Sankarsana spoke to Sanat Kumara, he spoke to Sankhyayana Muni, then Parashara Brahaspati, then he spoke to Maitreya Muni, and Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. This is all Kumar Sampradaya. Then he speaks about reawakening of creation. In the 5th chapter, what we have seen is the creation done by Mahavishnu. That is the primary creation. Right? That is Sarga. This is also Sarga, but that is the creation of millions of universes. Millions of universes are coming out from his bodily pores. Now, here is a creation that is happening within one universe. So, in the beginning of the day of Brahma, creation happens every day. Every day of Brahma begins with creation. So, that he explains. So, he takes one typical day of Brahma, and especially those on some special days, like the first day of Brahma, and also on the first day of the 51st year of Brahma, that kalpa circle, Padma Kalpa, where the universal lotus sprouts from the navel of Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu, and Brahma takes birth there. Brahma doesn't take birth, that is another day, but it is as good as birth. Right? Just like somebody joins a company, on the first day he will go, he will meet the boss, and then he will take his appointment order or whatever. He will sit on his desk cabin, open his laptop, and then you know, enter his password and then do whatever things. Same thing he will do next day also, right? Next day also he will swipe the card in the entrance, he will go. Some certain formalities may not be there, but opening his laptop, sitting on a chair and then settling down, opening the keys of the drawer, sitting on his cubicle, good morning to his colleagues, all this will happen every day. For you? For Brahma. Same project. Every day he has to do. That is daily schedule. Right, daily schedule mein. Every day we have to do the same backup, na? Same wake up, same backup, same aartis, same thing he also does. His day also begins with wake up. We have wake up prayer also, coming from this chapter only. So Savadabra Karuna Bhagavan Vibruddha. That comes in the 9th chapter. So this is reawakening of creation, where Brahmaji takes birth and he would search, where am I? Right? He would go all the way to the navel of the Lord through the lotus stem and then comes back. And with the inspiration given by the Lord, he meditates on the Lord. And he could not understand himself, but by meditation, he got the darshan of the Lord. So Brahmaji's search for the absolute truth is given till this point. And when he gets the darshan of Lord Garbhodaka Saya Vishnu, Maitreya Muni describes this whole darshan thing with beautiful analogies. Preksham kshipantam harito paladrayar sandhyabrani ver ururukma murdhanaha ratno dadharau sadisaumanasya vanasrajo venu bhujangri pange. So Lord's beauty is mocking the beauty of a coral mountain. So like that there are a series of beautiful verses. Mukhena lokarti harasmitena parisphurat kandala manditena shonayidena dharabimba bhasa pratyarhayantam sunasena subhra. So just by his beautiful smile, he would vanquish the distress of everyone. And with his beautiful smile, he acknowledges the service of his devotees. Shonayitena means he acknowledges. So the remuneration that he gives to the hard work of his devotees is smile. Nothing else. If you want some other remuneration, so many demigods are there in queue. So, but you want the pleasure of Krishna, then you can serve Krishna like that. So there are many other beautiful verses in this episode. Then Brahmaji, after seeing the beautiful form of Garbhodaka Saya Vishnu, he offers prayers to the Lord. He offers prayers to empower him to create. So we cannot go to the flow of all the prayers, just a couple of prayers. Yetu tvadiya charanambuja kosha gandham jighranti karana vivaraihi shrutivatanitam bhaktya grihita charana parayachatesham napaishinatha hridayam buruhat swapumsam. So he says that one with his intense devotional service, by the process of hearing, he can smell the fragrance coming from the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? Charanambuja kosha gandham. The lotus feet which is like lotus, emanates fragrance. And that fragrance is smelled by a devotee through ears. And that fragrance is carried by the Vedic sound. Shruti vatanitam. Shrutis means all the Vedic scriptures, they carry the fragrance of Krishna's lotus feet through their sounds, and that will enter the ears. And that entrance is considered smelling. That is one verse. So ears acting like nose, nostrils. So another beautiful verse comes in this, I think it's the 11th verse. Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita hrit saroja asse srutekshita patho nanunatha pumsam yadyad dhyata urugaya vibhavayanti tattattvapuh pranayase sadanugrahaya. So bhakti yoga paribhavita, when one is 100% engaged in his devotional service, right, asse srutekshita patho. And how he has to engage in devotional service? Sruta ikshita patho. He has to follow the scriptures. Then he will be able to see the Lord. Right? Sruta ikshita. Here the ears are acting like eyes. You see with eyes, you don't see with ears, but in the devotional service, you see with ears. You smell with nose, not with eyes, but still in devotional service, you smell with the eyes, smell with the ears. So ears can act as eyes, ears can act as nose, ears can act as hands. So, for us, angani yasya sakarendriya vritti vanti pasyanti pante kalayanti charanjaganti. He has his ability to do any activity with any sense, but we have to do all devotional activities with one sense, ears, like that. So, without engaging this sense, all the other activities of other senses will not have so much substance. Right? Definitely, one renders service to the Lord, he will definitely get the devotional credits. But if that is accompanied by the process of hearing, then he will be able to render that service in the right consciousness. Right? He will be able to realize the potency of that service. Whom am I serving? My God. He will understand it. He will develop more appreciation for what he is doing. So like that, there are wonderful series of prayers, and these prayers end with so savadabhra karuno bhagavan vivriddha. This how can I skip? So he glorified the Lord in whatever, some 21 verses, and in next 3 verses he says, my dear Lord, I am going to do service now. What is that? Creation of this material world, and it's not a small service. So for any service you have some guide. You have some doubt, you can go and ask. Right? How do I do this? You have some counselor, you have some project manager who can give some guidance in rendering service. Or at least you have some other people who have done that service earlier. By taking inputs from them, you can learn. Right? You have some books how to do that service, you can take guidance from them. We see some PPTs and then learn. But what Brahmaji is doing, he has absolutely no guidance. He is only person. One and only person. Only person he can take shelter of his Lord. So he takes shelter of the Lord. He says, Lord, I want to do this service. Please empower me. I want your empowerment. Without your empowerment, I cannot do this service. Second, if I am able to do this service nicely, I may become proud. Right? So please protect me from false pride. Second, if I do this service, I may develop some inclinations which are different from yours. Right? I may develop interests which are different from your interests. Because while doing some service, we get some different ideas. Right? This can also be done. Why am I doing this? Better I do that. Right? So while doing one service given by one, you know, guru or one spiritual authority, one may get different ideas, and Maya will give sufficient ideas to deviate. I am better off doing some other service than this. Right? So he will deviate from the service which is given to him and then try to do something else. So Brahmaji is praying for this. Please save me from deviation. So I want empowerment to render service, and I want protection from false ego, and I want protection from getting deviated from this service. So these are the important, we always need to be we need to remember the prayers of Brahma while rendering our services. Without Lord's empowerment, we cannot do any service. So credit goes to the Lord. So I am not the doer. So that is the first point. One has to be clear in mind. Second point is, while doing this service, if I think I am the doer, I may be imbued by false ego. False pride. False pride may come if I do it effectively. Then if I don't do it effectively, deviation may come. Even if I do it effectively, also deviation may come. So deviation and false pride are two important pitfalls that a servant has to be aware of. So after saying this, Prabhupada writes a brilliant point here. Fear of fall down and prayer for protection. Right? I shared that with you. One line. Fear of fall down, prayer for protection. That's what Brahmaji is doing here. FF and PP. So savadabhra karuno bhagavan vivriddha. So now, please get up my Lord. Day began, right? The Brahmaji's day. So our day begins with waking up Vrindavan Bihari and Sri Gauranga, right? Wake up prayer. Right? Our Gaurcharan Prabhu daily offers this wake up prayer, and then, you know, wakes up the Lord. Similarly, Brahmaji is waking up the Lord, and when his day began. You get up, I have to offer aarti to you, he says. So then Lord responds. Lord says, don't be anxious. You have desired to render this service, you have been empowered. What you have been praying for has already been granted to you. Whenever a devotee has a sincere intent to render service to the Lord, Lord will assist him. Lord will facilitate that service. Problem comes at the intention level. If the person himself is not convinced to render that service, where is the empowerment or assistance coming from the Lord? When one has sincere intent, immediately Lord will facilitate that. He says like that. Not only here, there are 2-3 other contexts where Lord says that you have prayed for this, that has already been granted. Kardamani's episode also, he says. You wanted to create progeny to assist me in populating this universe, it's granted. So don't be anxious, he says. So having understood the desire and service mood of Brahma, Lord spoke in deep voice. Lord already understands the desires of living entities, his servants. So like that, he gives several beautiful points. Lord's conversation is very long, we will not go into those details. He predicts Brahma Mohan Lila also here. Then, after describing the reawakening of creation and Brahmaji's prayers, Maitreya Muni describes the divisions of creation. There are different divisions of creation. What are they? There are 6 types of primary creation. And there are 3 types of secondary creation. And there is 10th type, which is mixed creation. So the 6 types of primary creation are, so I will just summarize. And in this chapter some characteristics of time also comes. See, Mahatattva, Ahankara, Tanmatra, senses, indriyas, demigods, and avidya shakti, ignorance. So all these are the categories of primary creation. Of course, some are like subsets of others. When you say ahankara, it is actually coming after mahatattva. When you say tanmatra, it is coming after ahankara. So all this may seem to be different stages of creation, one creation, but they are also identified as the creation of 6 separate things, 6 separate things. They are different stages, but they are also there, right? So, and 3 types of secondary creation are creation of immovable jivas, creation of lower species, and human beings. Okay. So now, when you say immovable jivas, who are they? Plants. The nourishment is vertical nourishment. More precise, bottom to up nourishment. So plants eat through roots and nourishment goes upwards. When it is a human being, then it is up to bottom, top to bottom nourishment. We eat through mouth and the nourishment goes like this down. And when it is coming to animals, it is horizontal nourishment. They eat from this end and it will come from other end. Body will be nourished on the way. So these are different ways of visarga. And devatas, some devatas are created by Brahmaji, some devatas are created by the Lord. So like that, devatas are a mixed creation, right? For example, 4 kumaras are an example of mixed creation. They are created by Brahma also and they are created by the Lord also. How? Because Brahmaji meditated on the Lord and from that meditation kumaras came, they are considered creation of the Lord. And because Brahmaji created them, they are considered creation of Brahma also. They are both Prakrita and Vaikrita, Sarga and Visarga. So after this, Maitreya Muni describes the calculation of time. They are all very complicated calculations. I read couple of times, but I couldn't go deep into it or understand it properly. Every time I outsource this to someone, Nimai Leela Prabhu, Avatara Leela Prabhu, Balram Shakti Prabhu, they speak on this. I just made some tables. They were Subodhini. Next, 12th chapter. So 12th chapter is 12th chapter is Visarga. That's the main Visarga. So Brahmaji first creates 5 kinds of nisans. Okay, we thought of having something interactive. No? You only speak. Yes, Prabhu. Brahmaji, what did he create first? 5, what are they? Okay, five types of ignorance are created, nisains. Mahamoham, Moham, Tamishra, Andhatamishra and Tamaha. Okay, next. After that, what did he do? No, before the creation. After the creation of five kinds of nisains, what was Brahmaji's feeling? He was dissatisfied. Why is he dissatisfied? Drishtva papiyasim trishtim. He considered that it is a pious, impious creation. I had to create such a horrible thing. Means, he did not create software, he created virus first. First virus has been created to attack the software, then software has been created. He said, my God, but virus has to be created. This is material world. No? So he was dissatisfied. Next, with Vidya Shakti, he created four Kumaras. Okay. There, four Kumaras are the creation of four aspects of knowledge. What are the four aspects of knowledge? Anyone?
Yoga,
Sankhya. Perfect. So after that, after creation of four Kumaras, what did he say, Brahma? Create. Okay, what did they say? No. Disobedience, correct. Disobedience, disrespect. Then Brahmaji was slightly angry, but he could control the anger. Nevertheless, that anger manifested from his eyebrows, between his eyebrows, as Shiva. So after Shiva was born, what did he do? No, he cried. That's why he got the name Rudra. And Brahma gives him 11 places of residence, 11 names and 11 wives. And Shiva starts creating. So what kind of people he created? Ghosts and this kind of people, like himself, as powerful as himself, with same qualities. And what did they do? They devoured the entire creation. They came to attack Brahma also. Then what did Brahma say? No need to create such kind of people. Yeah, you go and do tapasya. Then what did Shiva do? Shiva circumambulated. Shiva just circumambulated Brahma. That you did not remove me from service. He removed me from service. He did not complain like that. He just said, okay, this is what is needed. I have to take rest now. Sleep mode. So he went and did his tapasya. Then Brahmaji created 10 sages. 10 sages. So, all that Narada and all those 10 sages he created. Narada from Bhakti Shakti and others from various modes. From shadow he created Kardama. Somebody came from Thumb. Who is that? Daksha. Is it? I don't know. You can see. I don't remember. So after that, Maitreya Muni was hesitating to speak the next episode. We have heard that once Brahmaji was affected by lust when he saw his own daughter walk. So that shows his hesitation. So after that, Brahmaji, in spite of getting distracted by walk, still his ability to create did not slacken. Right? Although an exalted soul sometimes circumstantially may commit some mistakes, but still his prowess is not diminished. So immediately after this walk episode, Brahmaji creates four Vedas. That shows his exalted position did not minimize. But if a neophyte personality thinks that, array, is Brahma still he is behaving like this, that he will fall down. Right? His position will not be minimized. He is in his own glory. But by criticizing him, this fellow will fall down. So one has to be very careful when... So there are different opinions about it. In one scripture it is said that Brahmaji is Vakpati. Here it is said that he is Vak, father of Vak. And some say both are same. But some say Saraswati is the wife of Brahma, Vak is the daughter of Brahma. That's basically Bhagavatam's version. Vak is daughter of Brahma. So there are different opinions. Nimailila Prabhu knows more about it. He read some other references about this Vak. Next. Then 10 sages could not create properly. There is deficiency in the creation. Then Brahmaji thought that why population is not increasing? How do I increase this population? From his meditation to serve Krishna, by increasing population, Swayambhumanu and Shatrupa manifested. They are not brothers and sisters, right? They are a couple. So they said, Swayambhumanu said, I am obedient son, I am not like Shiva, right, who creates disturbance in your service. I am not like Kumaras, who disrespect you by not following your orders. He didn't say all that, but Chakravartipada writes some of these points. So he proved to be more obedient son in terms of assisting his father in his service. So Brahmaji said, okay, fine, you can create. So then Swayambhumanu says, where should I stay? He says, earth. Where is earth? Lift it up first. Then from Brahmaji is meditating, are you? Bhumandala just got merged in water, fell into Garbhodaka ocean. So how do I lift it up now? So then from Brahmaji's nostrils, Varahadeva manifests and lifts the earth. So this happened in Swayambhumanvantara. So in this context only our Maitreya Muni merges with another incarnation of Varaha, which is Chakshusha Manvantara incarnation, Nila Varaha, and he combines both and then speaks, right? So only this Sweta Varaha, who came in Swayambhu Manvantara, he lifted earth only, but Nila Varaha he also created Hiranyaksha. Okay, both are combined. So then also there are prayers of sages offered to Varahadev, all these are also described. Then Vidura very naturally he asks, who is this Hiranyakashipu? I want to know more details about him. Then Maitreya Muni describes the whole background. Once sage Kashyapu Muni was doing his evening rituals and Diti came, and she was infatuated by lust at that time. Mainly she had a desire to become a mother, because her co-wives, her sisters are already mothers of so many children, and she also wanted to bear a child. So she went at a wrong time and requested Kashyapa, and Kashyapa said, this is not the right time, wait for a while. And there are glories of Shiva and how Shiva is going around at this time, right? He will punish people who are doing this wrong acts, forbidden acts at wrong time. So he says all that, but still Diti was very persistent. So this shows that when someone is doing a mistake, it not only affects himself, depending on what is his position and status, the influence of his mistake affects multiple people. Ajamila did a mistake, but who is he? He is a simple Brahmana. He ruined his own life. But when Diti did a mistake, she is in a much more exalted and responsible position than Ajamil. She is the wife of a Prajapati. So she did a mistake. And what is the result? Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha came. All three worlds were in danger because of this mistake. So the more time, you know, passes in our life, the more, say, senior that we become, the more experienced we become, the more responsibility comes upon us to act in an ideal way, right? In a proper way. Ideal way means not, one should not prematurely, you know, pose oneself as someone much more advanced than himself, but there is a responsibility to grow and then improve our consciousness, especially when the age is progressing, time is progressing, like that. So people see us as, oh, more experienced, oh, you are already so many so and so years in the ashram. So people, the new people expect certain kind of decorum and behavior, behavioral pattern and character and dealings from a person. So that affects a bigger set of people. So Diti gives us this lesson. Then Kashyapa, although initially he was kind of controlling and counseling and consoling Diti, still, because at this point he is little weak-hearted, he just gave in, right? He could have chastised or whatever, postponed or whatever, but although initially he postponed, he could not stick to it. He just gave in and then engaged in that forbidden act. And the result is these two, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So the same Kashyapa, we have not yet reached there, in the 6th canto, 18th chapter, after Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were killed, then Diti becomes so envious of Indra. Diti says, because of this fellow Indra, the Lord killed my sons. right? Lord sided the demigods. So now somehow I have to get a son who can kill Indra, right? So that was her desire. This happens in the 6th canto, ending chapters, 18th and 19th chapters. Then she serves Kashyapa so nicely, constantly, and then Kashyapa is so pleased, and finally he says, what do you want? What is your desire? I am so pleased with your service, I want to fulfill your desire. Then she says, I want a son who can kill Indra. Then Kashyapa thought that, hey, I have been tricked. Now, I have to protect Indra. Right? Indra is the king of demigods, he is in a responsible position. How can I give her a benediction of a son who can kill Indra? No, I will trick her. So Kashyapa, what he did? He gave her Pumsavana Vrata, which is basically offering devotional service to Lord Vishnu. And he recommended that Vrata, and if he said, if you do deviate from the rules and regulations, you will not get a son who can kill Indra. You will get a son who is becoming a follower of Indra. He will become a friend of Indra. So, like that he said. And Diti followed that Vrata sincerely. So, I will not go into the details of the pastime, that's the birth of Maruts. But the point is, Kashyapa, in 6th canto, 18th chapter, he exhibited his intelligence of transforming Diti's character, transforming Diti's attitude by engaging her in devotional service. But in 3rd canto, 14th chapter, he did not do so. Right? So, I mean, there is an observation we can make. Kashyapa at this point seems to be a little weak-hearted compared to what he is in the 6th canto. So, there is a growth that everyone is undergoing. Right? What we appreciate Kashyapa's activity in 6th canto, 18th chapter, but we cannot appreciate so much his activity in 3rd canto, 14th chapter. So, along with not appreciating this activity in this chapter and appreciating that activity in that chapter, we should also see that everybody is growing. Right? So some sadhaka may have done a mistake now. 5 years down the line, if he sticks to the process of devotional service, he will not do the same mistake. His behavior and his thought pattern, his attitude might be, will become more refined. Right? If I say that he has done this mistake, he will do like this only. 4 saal pehle bhi yahi kiya, now also he is doing the same thing. So, if we don't acknowledge the growth of a devotee over years, we are basically expressing our lack of faith in the process. Process is effective. One who sincerely follows the process will grow in his attitude. So, if there is not much growth seen, then he may not be following the process properly. By seeing examples of people who may not have exhibited some improvement in their pattern, we should not lose our faith on the process. Right? And also we should also acknowledge that what I observe may not be the fact. Right? Internally, what's going on with him and Krishna, what prayer he is offering for his personal improvement and all, we don't know. We can't perceive all that. Right? But apparently we may have to take certain actions and other things. But process works. So Kashyapa is more advanced in 6th canto 18th chapter than 3rd canto 14th chapter. Vritrasura is more advanced than Chitraketu. Bharat Maharaj as Jada Bharat and as Deer is much more spiritually advanced than Bharat. Right? So all these are not failure stories. They are success stories. They are showing growth. There is gradation and growth in one's advancement, right? In such exalted devotees also, right? Overnight one cannot become a pure devotee. It will take some time. Daksha's example is presented in a different way. 4th canto, he offended Shiva. Yeah, and he is not a pure devotee anyways. And because of the traces of offenses that he committed to Shiva, he did not get the mercy of Vishnu in the 6th canto in spite of having his darshan. Chakravartipada writes there that Daksha was not given the, you know, given prema for the Lord. He was thrown into the whirlpool of karma by the Lord himself. After Daksha performed tapasya, he chanted Hamsa Guhya prayers for a long time, and then Lord gave him darshan. He said, impelled by my illusory energy, you will create so much of progeny. And impelled by my illusory energy, your sons also, not sons, your progeny, your praja also will create so much of population. Basically, he is making him enter into household life. And because of this, traces of this offense only, he offended Narada Muni also. Right. So that example is may not be exactly fitting into this category that we are discussing. In Dhruva also we have seen growth. Materially he is very ambitious before meeting Narada Muni. But after following the process given by Narada Muni for whatever, 6 months, he became very advanced devotee. So everybody is growing. I think we should take a break now, 5 minutes.
This is hot.
So this charging is over. I didn't get charger also. Hare Krishna. I have so many exciting slides for third canto later chapters. Nahini, it's so far. No need. It's okay. 15th chapter. When Diti became pregnant and all the demigods became very perturbed because of the pregnancy of Diti, there is a lot of darkness in the universe. So all the demigods went to Brahmaji and asked him the reason for this darkness. Then Brahmaji said, he told a story. Once my sons, 4 Kumaras, went to Vaikuntha, and he described this whole Vaikuntha, how all the devotees of Vaikuntha are having similar forms as the Lord, and they have their own airplanes, Vaimanika, Salalanas, Charitani, Shashvat, Gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartu antarjale anuvikasan madhumadhavinam gandhena khandita dhiyopyaniramukshapanta. So they are disturbed by the sweet fragrance of Madhavi flowers coming into their nostrils because they consider it as a distraction for their Krishna katha. So then he describes the non-envious nature of the birds of Vaikuntha and also the flowers and plants of Vaikuntha. So later the consciousness of all the residents were absorbed in Krishna's katha. Krishnatmanam naraja adhadurusmayajir. So all that he wonderfully describes. And he also pities on people who do not take interest in this Krishna katha, in the descriptions of Vaikuntha. Yanna vrajanta gavido rachananavada srinvantiye anya vishaya kukathamati ghani. Their intelligence has been spoiled by hearing kukatha, bad topics. So they are misfortunate, unfortunate. So like that he describes them. And in such glorious Vaikuntha, my Kumaras have once attempted to enter. So when they passed through, you know, initial gates, and when he came to the 7th gate, they saw Jaya and Vijaya, the doorkeepers, who were obstructing the path of Kumaras. So Kumaras criticized these Vaikuntha doorkeepers, Jaya and Vijaya, and said, how can there be insecurity in the residents of Vaikuntha? How can there be fear? Who will come and then disturb your Lord or whatever? So why are you behaving like this? You don't fit to be staying in Vaikuntha. You can go back. You can go to the material world. They just immediately curse. Then the Lord arrives on the scene with his beautiful form. Lord's form is wonderfully described here. Then, as soon as the Lord came, the breeze, the aroma coming from the tulsi offered to the lotus feet of the Lord would enter the nostrils of the 4 Kumaras and transform their minds. Right? तस्यारविन्दनयनस्य पदारविन्दकिञ्जल्कमिश्रतुलसीमकरन्दवायु अन्तर्गतस्वविवरेण चकार तेषां संक्षोभमक्षरदुषाम् अपि चित्ततन्वो. देन् आल् दि फोर् कुमारास् आफर् ब्यूटिफुल् प्रेयर्स् टु द लार्ड् एण्ड् and the Lord speaks in such a way that four Kumaras are little surprised. So Lord tells them, oh, so much, lot of offense happened because of me, and my servants have done some offense to you, that's like my offense only. I can lop off my arm also if that is hostile to you, that behaves hostile to you. And he says, Yat sevaya charana padma pavitra renum sadhyakshata akhilamalam pratilabdhashilam na shreer viraktim abhimam vijahati yasya preksha lavarta yatare niyaman vahanti. So only because of the service to brahmanas, the dust of my lotus feet has become so glorious that it can vanquish all the sinful reactions of people. Only because of my service to the brahmanas that Mother Lakshmi does not leave me. Right, although she has so many worshippers waiting in queue to get a slight trace of her mercy, she wouldn't look at them, she would just follow me, although I am not interested in her service. All this glory I have only because of service to brahmanas, and I take pleasure in accepting the food which is offered to the mouths of brahmanas, which is dripping with ghee. Important line, underline. Right, so that I take more pleasure than, you know, direct offerings given to me in sacrificial fire. So like that he glorifies the brahmanas. Then I, whatever curse you have given to my doorkeepers, Jay and Vijaya, actually ordained by me only, I sanction that curse. Let them leave the spiritual world, let them go to the material world. Actually the background is that Lord wanted to fight. He also has desires, right? He wants to fight with people, but the Supreme Lord in the Vaikuntha, you know, fighting with other Vaikunthavasis doesn't look very exciting. So all these fighting things should happen only in the material world. So Lord had sent his own pure devotees to the material world and started fighting with them. So to give any kind of pleasure to the Lord, devotees are needed. So Lord descended. He fought with so many demons in Vrindavan, right? Like Vritrasura, not Vritrasura, what is that? Trinavarta, Shakatasur, Aghasur, Bakasur, so many asuras he killed. Vyomasur, Keshi, Dhenuka, Putana, so many people came. And that is in Vrindavan. In Mathura also he killed so many demons. Mathura he fought with Kovalaya Pida. Then Shala, Toshala, Kuta, Chanura, Mushtika, all these wrestlers are there. Finally he killed Kamsa. After that he fought with Jarasandha and his 23 Akshohinis of armies 17 times. And he was Kalayavana was chasing him. He killed him in a different way. So like that, Lord fought with so many people. So none of them could offer any fighting pleasure to the Lord. So Krishna is thinking, "Arey, who can? I am not satisfied with my fight." Right? And Lord, to encourage other opponents in fight, he had to maintain a low profile. Why, for example, while he is fighting with Kovalaya Pida, purposely he runs away from Kovalaya Pida as if he is afraid, just to encourage Kovalaya Pida to fight. Purposely he will punch Kovalaya Pida very, you know, softly, so that it will not die in one punch only. Right? So Lord, just to keep his fighting pleasure on, he would encourage them to fight. Lord has to put some efforts, but Lord is not satisfied. So finally, in the pretext of searching Shamantakamani, Lord meets Jambavan. Then 28 days long fight happened. Now Lord with his full vigor he is fighting. Jambavan also with his full vigor he is fighting. So after 28 days of fight, Lord got satisfied. Now I am fulfilled, I am satisfied now. Okay, in this incarnation also I got some opportunity to fight properly. So similarly, to offer any pleasure to the Lord, devotee is needed. So Lord, if he descends to the world, so many demonic people are already there, but they don't have so much caliber to fight with the Lord. So Lord has to send his devotees like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. For 3 births you become demons, I will fight with you and have some fighting pleasure. That's the main background. So then Kumaras replied to the Lord, your words are quite astonishing and surprising to us. How can you become glorious, or your guest become glorious by serving us? Right, you are already glorious. So Shri, so like that they give so much of explanation, their surprise, they kind of counters what Lord says, right, they attempt at least. So you are actually the protector of Brahmanas, and you are just exemplifying, you are setting an example by respecting us, by speaking all these words. So like that they say, and then Lord reconciles the whole situation that your curse to them is ordained by me only. So they will go according to your curse, they will give me fighting pleasure. Of course he doesn't say that, but they will shortly come back to me, come back to Vaikuntha. Then Lord speaks to Jayavijaya, don't worry, you go to the material world, but don't fear. So although I can nullify this Brahmana's curse, I don't do this. Right? So after thus speaking, these two personalities, Jaya and Vijaya, descend into the womb of Diti. That is the cause of darkness. So Brahmaji narrated this entire story of Vaikuntha, curse of Jayavijayas to demigods when they came for a solution. Brahmaji did not offer any solution. He did some Krishna Katha. So Krishna Katha is a solution. Then finally he says, I cannot do anything now. No solution with me. Just wait till the Lord takes some action. And they happily, they went happily to their own abodes. Right. Then he, Maitreya Muni describes the fight between Varaha and Hiranyaksha. So Hiranyaksha and Varaha, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, when they were born, there were so many inauspicious omens in the sky. Both of them grew up with steel framed bodies. They were just torturing people. Hiranyaksha went in all directions and tried to control. Then there was a battle between Hiranyaksha and Varaha. Actually, before he goes to Varuna and says, please fight with me. He also has his fighting spirit. He wants to fight with someone, he is not getting a proper combat. Whomever opponent he approaches, he will just slap and then he will die. Where is the fighting pleasure there? One day, here we were having some drama. You remember, Prabhu? Ramayana drama. In the Madhugaurang Prabhu's days. Ramayana drama. Prabhuji was Ram at that time. So, Garuda Prabhu was playing Jatayu. Right? So at that time, so Jatayu and Ravana were supposed to fight for some time. So Ravana just slapped and Garuda fell. Which a background music was going on constantly. And Garuda just was lying there. And Ravana, what, he didn't know what to do. So fighting should happen for some time. Then only they will get pleasure, audience also will get some pleasure. So till one gets a proper combat, so there is no fighting pleasure. So Hiranyakasipu was in search of that proper combat. So Varuna denied intelligently, I can't fight with you, I'm an old man, you find someone else. So then Narada Muni tells him, Varahadeva is in Hiranya, what is that, Garbhodaka ocean. So then Hiranyaksha goes there, and there was a big fight between both of them. So then there were prayers to Lord Varaha. So that's how the 19th chapter ends. Yeah, criticism. So Varahadev criticizes Lord Varaha, Hiranyaksha criticizes Lord Varaha, and Acharyas cannot tolerate any blasphemy towards the Lord. So they give indirect glorification which is hidden in that criticism. Right? They can see only glorification of Krishna throughout Bhagavatam in any verse. Most of the times when demons criticize the Lord, they give positive interpretations, they change the language. So you cannot, just like demons change the language of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and misinterpret the verse given there as impersonalistic, demoniac, or something very low. Similarly, devotees, acharyas, Vaishnava acharyas interpret some verses of Bhagavatam as glorification of Krishna. They are more Krishna conscious. So we have an open book exam. I purposely framed one open book question. Did someone attempt that? So what is the difference between the misinterpretation given by outside people and acharyas given like this? Okay. Next. in the 20th verse, Savanakrishi asks some questions that please continue Brahmaji's creation. That Vidura is a great devotee. What else had happened in their discussion? He asked like that. Then Vidura inquires about Brahmaji's creation. So again, this chapter is a summary of what has happened earlier. Again, the Karana Srishti and Karya Srishti will be described here. Creation of 5 kinds of Nisayans will also happen. And further, the creation of Yakshas, Rakshasas, the demons, the Twilight Girl episode, then Gandharvas, Apsaras and various other categories of living entities within the universe are created by Brahma. So that summary is given in the 20th chapter. So, 21st chapter begins with a description of Swayambhu Manu's dynasty. So far, what happened in the creation? The Lord created various universes, that is mentioned in 3rd and 5th chapter. Then 23 elements got created. Then Lord had sent his cohesive energy, they got amalgamated. That is 6th chapter, universe formed. And within that universe, Garbhodaksai Vishnu is there, from his navel, Brahmaji manifests. That is the 8th chapter. Brahmaji offers prayers, 9th chapter. There are 10 divisions of creation, that is 10th chapter. Calculations of time, 11th chapter. Then Brahmaji starts creating. So 10th and 11th are like informative chapters. It may not be in the flow. They are like index. Right? The concept is explained in 10th and 11th chapters. Then 12th chapter, Brahmaji starts creating. So he creates so many things, and finally he comes to the creation of Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa. So when Swayambhu Manu Shatarupa came, and Swayambhu Manu said, "You lift the earth," and from that point the whole topic diverted into Varahadev, Hiranyaksha. So then 3.12 till 3.20 is like Varaha episode and the things connected to it. Now again we are resuming from where we left in 3.13, Manu. Right? What happened after Manu was Manu became the king. So how did he create? So Manu actually had three daughters and 2 sons. So Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, then Uttanapada and Priyavrata. So Devahuti, her family life and her descendants are described from 3rd canto 21st chapter till the end of this canto. And 4th canto 1st chapter also has the description of her daughters. And 4th canto 1st chapter also describes the descendants of Akuti and Prasuti. And Prasuti is one of the daughters is Sati. And Sati's story is till 7th chapter. And Uttanapada is described in the 4th canto, 8th chapter. The rest of 4th canto is Uttanapada's dynasty. Then 5th canto, first 15 chapters are the dynasty of Priyavrata. So this is the whole from 3.21 till 5.15 is the description of Swayambhu Manu's dynasty. Okay. Flow. Both. Sarga and Visarga both. Lord's creation is also there, Brahma's creation is also there. No. Actually, Jiva Goswami says that if you assign cantos to topics, there are 10 topics of Bhagavatam, there are 12 cantos of Bhagavatam. If you assign these 10 topics to these 12 cantos and then also say that they are happening sequentially and all, that is wrong interpretation. All these 10 topics are present in all the 12 cantos of Bhagavatam with different degrees of emphasis. 3rd and 4th cantos predominantly emphasize Sarga and Visarga. Actually 3rd canto has Sarga and Visarga both, but Visarga is more prominent because Sarga is mentioned in 3-4 chapters only, Lord's creation. Rest is all Visarga. Then 4th canto is full of Visarga. 5th canto half is Visarga. 5th canto second half is Thanam. Then 6th canto is Poshanam. It is a prominent thing. There are other things also. Ashraya Tattva is there in several cantos. Then some people say that first 2 cantos are not a part of Bhagavatam because they are actually an introduction. Some say that first canto is not a part of Bhagavatam because Sukadeva Goswami did not start speaking. Some say second canto is not a part of Bhagavatam because the 10 topics of Bhagavatam begin in the last chapter of 2nd canto and 3rd canto is actually beginning. First 2 cantos are like introduction. In one sense you can say that they are like prelude to the rest of Bhagavatam, but the 10 topics description is already there in these two cantos also. First canto, there is a lot of Ashraya Tattva described, right? Taking shelter of the Lord. Then first canto has some creation, Sarga also, third chapter, you remember, Karanavdaksa Vishnu, second chapter also it comes. Then also Poshana is there, Lord's Poshana is there in the first canto. Ishanukatha. Then second canto has a lot of Sarga and Visarga. So all 10 topics are found in all cantos, but predominantly in one canto, one topic is mentioned. Next publication is 10 topics of Bhagavata. You saw the cover page? I think he saw, someone saw. So Kardama pleases the Lord and gets his darshan. So Lord Kardama Muni, he was son of Brahma, and the instruction that he received was, he had to create progeny. So he performed austerities to please the Lord. For what? To get a wife. To execute his service of creating progeny, he is depending on the Lord. So more insights we have discussed in our regular class, if you remember. So Kardama Muni is performing austerities. Lord came, so whatever austerities you have performed, the purpose of that is to get a wife and to engage in household life. I approve your request. 3 days from now, Swayambhu Manu will come along with his wife and daughter and offer his daughter Devahuti to you in marriage, so you can live household life. So then Kardama, and his prayers are also very beautiful. Lokamsha lokanu katam pasumsha hitva shritaste charanada vatram parasparam tad gunavada sidhu piyusha niryabita deha dharma. This is one of Gaurambhu's favorite verses. Lokamsha lokanu katam sidhu and piyusha, intoxicating and sweet. So the Lord spoke to Kardama Muni, he fulfilled his desire, and Lord went, and there is a slight description of Bindusara over there, and Kardama Muni was waiting in his hermitage, and as predicted by the Lord, Manu comes along with his daughter Devahuti. So there was nice conversation, because Kardama Muni glorifies a king. Swayambhu Manu is the king, right? So Kardama Muni glorifies the king, and Manu also glorifies Kardama Muni as a sage. So they both exchange some talks and encourage each other. They have respect for each other. And Manu offers Devahuti to Kardama Muni. Then Kardama Muni was initially a bit silent. Manu says, when some offering comes on its own accord, you should accept it. Otherwise later, if you hanker for it and if you have to go and search for it, it's little embarrassing for you, right? If the server is giving some extra gulab jamun, take it. Right, out of modesty or something like that, if you deny it and later you develop a desire to eat it again, then it is a little embarrassing. He says, "Khatam ho gaya." "Agliya nahi." He will say like that. So Kardama Muni accepted the offer with a condition. "Yes, I will accept your daughter. I am also in need of a wife. But I will be with her only till she gives birth to a child. After that I will go to sannyas life." See how glorious are these sages and kings. Their retirement is fixed. Which person who is just about to marry will think of his retirement? Is there anyone in the entire, at least land of India, or this planet? Hardly anyone. They don't plan for retirement from family. So he is saying, first condition, before marriage is, as soon as she becomes pregnant or she gives birth to a child, I will leave. I have my job. That is my main job. Because Brahmaji told me, you have to create progeny, I am just doing this service. Right? I am not attached to this service. I am not attached to your daughter, although she is so beautiful that seeing her playing with a ball on the terrace, when Gandharva fellow just fell down from the airplane, right, with his head top to bottom, he fell down like that. Still, I am not so attached. So I accept, do my household life properly, then I will retire. And Swayambhu Manu did not say that, "Arey, my daughter, what will happen to my daughter if you leave like that? Why did I choose such a son-in-law like you? I will not give my daughter to you, let me go back somewhere else. Right? It's not like that also. So, and Dayahuti also did not say that you are giving my father anyaya kar rahe. Right? You are doing injustice. What kind of husband you are choosing? First you know, took care of me so nicely in the palace, and you are bringing me to this, you know, secluded place where hermitage is there, and this daddy is such a big sage is there. You are allowing me to live in such poor living conditions, right, in such austere conditions. And that too, he will not live with me for lifelong also. He will leave as soon as I become pregnant. What is this? She also did not complain. And Shatrupa, she did not complain. Right, Shatrupa, generally mothers, they have so much affection for the daughters, and when they always want some comforts for the daughters. Right? My daughter should go to a proper family and all that. So there's no protest. All four people completely agreed with this condition. Right? Everything is transparent, clear. It's all surprising things in Bhagavatam. So then Kardamani married Devahuti there at hermitage only. Marriage did not happen with so much pomp in Barhishmati kingdom also. So Sayambhumanu, and towards the end of the chapter, Sukadeva Goswami beautifully describes the rule of Swayambhumanu, household life. So Swayambhumanu is so glorious because although he is the progenitor of mankind, although he is a great king, still he was not absorbed in sense gratification. Every day he would take pleasure in Krishna Katha. His life is centered around Krishna's seva and Krishna's glorification. So that makes him glorious. So that is third kind of 22nd chapter. Now, how Kardama was served by Devahuti is described in the 23rd chapter. Vishrambhena Atmasauchena Shemena Damena. So all with all these wonderful qualities that a wife should have in her service to her husband. So Devahuti exemplified all these qualities. So she served him nicely. And what is so relevant for a sadhaka or a brahmachari with this description? A wife is serving husband, right? How she is serving husband, why should we study? Actually, these are all the qualities of a disciple. So Kardamani is not only the husband of Devahuti, he is actually the spiritual authority of Devahuti. So that is how a husband or a father is supposed to be. Guru na sasyat, svajano na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat, daivam na sasyat, na patischa sasyat, right? Namocha yadyat samupeta mrityam. So one should not become a father or a mother or a guru or a husband or a demigod, etc., if he has no ability to deliver his dependents from the birth-death cycle. So Kardamani had the ability to deliver Devahuti from the birth and death cycle. He had the glory of his austerity. He had the ability to please the Supreme Lord with his austerities and get a benediction from the Lord himself that I will become your son. Kardamani already had that benediction. So now, I will become your son means through whom? Through Devahuti only. Kardamani had the ability to bestow the benediction upon Devahuti of becoming the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, namocha yedyat samupeta mrityam. He had the ability to relieve her from birth and death cycle. So now, Devahuti serves Kardamani so nicely. Then, all the blessings I have attained from the Lord through my austerity, meditation and Krishna consciousness, which are free from fear and lamentation, I shall offer them to you. This is a beautiful lesson there in the 7th verse of this chapter, that Devahuti did not do anything. Prabhupada's purports are also very deep here. Devahuti, her direct service to the Lord is not very much mentioned. Devahuti's service to her husband only is mentioned. Right? So that is sufficient for her to get protection of the Lord. So the lesson there is, if one sincerely serves a bona fide spiritual master and dedicates his entire life and soul in the service of a spiritual master, that is sufficient for him to become an object of mercy of Krishna. He need not separately endeavor for it. Because spiritual master, when he is pleased with the service of a disciple, he will bestow all the benedictions that he has received from the Lord upon his disciple. So the only duty or responsibility of a disciple is that, how should I keep my spiritual master happy? So when that is there, that focus is there, he need not worry about Krishna's happiness. Krishna will anyways be happy. He said, prasada bhagavat prasada. That's what we can learn from Devahuti. Prabhupada writes brilliant purports there. So Devahuti served like that. Then Kardamani asked, what do you want? I am very pleased with your service. Then Devahuti, as it is natural for a woman, she said, I want a child. Right? Then Kardamani, by his mystic power, created a big aerial mansion. And that description of the mansion goes for about 10 verses. So that is a flying mansion. There are so many servants there. So with his mystic power, a yogi can do anything. Then Kardamani expanded himself into 9 forms. And then united with Mother Devahuti. And their household life was glorified by even demigods also. So Devahuti entered Bindu Sarovar. She became very beautiful. And then she boarded the airplane. And Kardamani was appearing as if he is a moon in between so many stars. So like that, they travelled in so many places for several years. How many years? 100 years? Huh? 100 years. Yeah. For 100 years they enjoyed their household life. And finally, she became the mother of 9 daughters. Then Kardamani started living. Kardamani was about to leave. Then Devahuti came and said, my dear Kardamani, you have not bestowed fearlessness upon me. Yeah, you gave me children, they are all daughters, and these 9 daughters will marry, you know, their respective husbands, and then they leave me and I am alone. You have not bestowed fearlessness upon me. Because a woman has to be, if you see external level, externally a woman has to be under the protection of a father or a husband or a son. Now if Kardamani leaves, Devahuti is without the protection of a man in the form of a son or a father or husband. So she did not receive that benediction of fearlessness. And spiritually seeing, she said, I have not taken sufficient advantage of your association. I only have utilized your association for my sense gratification. 100 years we gratified our senses and now I became a mother of 9 daughters. But spiritual benefit I have not derived. Basically she is asking, I want to become the mother of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Kardamani says, I will bestow. He will stay back. And then again Devahuti will become the mother of Kapiladev. And then Kardamani renounces. So after the appearance of Lord Kapila, Brahmaji comes and glorifies the household life of Kardama and Devahuti, and he predicts the future activities of Lord Kapila, and he also arranges for the marriage of these 9 daughters of Kardama and Devahuti, and Kardamani offers prayers to Lord Kapila, and then Kardamani goes for renunciation. And why Kardamani had to leave home for renunciation when the Lord is personally present in his house? Supreme Lord is there. Why would one renounce to engage in full-time devotional service to the Supreme Lord? And that Supreme Lord is directly present in his own house. He is leaving the Lord and going out for renunciation. The reason is, Kardamani wanted to set an example. Lord wanted Kardamani to set an example. At the ripe age, one has to enter the vanaprastha life or sannyasi life. He cannot continue in household life for the rest of his life. And also, to avoid the mixture of dasya and vatsalya, because Kardamani is a dasya bhakta, now Lord has become his son, vatsalya emotions may come in him. So, yeah, he wants to fix himself in the mood of a servant. So like that, so many other reasons were there, given by Chakravartipad and Prabhupada. So Lord, in the presence of the Lord, Kardamani retires. Then, after Kardamani retired, in the 25th chapter, we see that Shaunaka Rishi was eager to hear more about Lord Kapila. Devahuti asks several questions. It's already 1:30. In half an hour, I'll summarize TLK. So Devahuti's first question was, my dear Lord, please dispel my illusion. I am with this aham mamedi conception. So due to my false ego, which is created by your maya, so I want your shelter. Then Kardamani answers her first question, first request to dispel her illusion by explaining Adhyatmika Yoga. Adhyatmika Yoga is a combination of Jnana and Yoga and Bhakti. Bhakti is there, Ashtanga Yoga is there, Jnana or Sankhya is also there. So these three are parts of Adhyatmika Yoga. So out of them, Bhakti is the supreme, Bhakti is superior over Jnana and Yoga. Right? So the superiority of Bhakti Yoga is explained in several verses. And how to get that Bhakti? By associating with sadhus. So sadhu sangha is emphasized there. So if one associates with sadhus, one will get prema to the Lord. Tatam prasangan mavire samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana katha, like that. So one has to practice jnana and yoga, and that practice of jnana and yoga is not complete without bhakti. So jnana and yoga are dependent on bhakti, right? So now Devahuti asks further questions. So her second question is, what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain your lotus feet? The third question of Devahuti is, I want to know the process of jnana in detail. Fourth question is, I want to know the process of yoga in detail. So after understanding the supremacy of bhakti, why she is asking for jnana and yoga? Not to practice jnana and yoga, but to increase her appreciation for bhakti by putting contrast. Right? So understand the disadvantages of so and so path also, and understand the superiority of this path over other paths by knowing the technicalities of other paths. So that is why she is asking for jnana and yoga. So Kapil Dev answered the second question first. Second question is, what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain you? Now first question is already over, Adhyatmika Yoga thing. So bhakti has to be performed without material desires. Devanam, Gunalinganam. So you must have heard from Balram Shakti Prabhu how he correlates it with Anyabhilashita Sunyam. Radhikala Prabhu, okay, good. So he explained this, and he also explained the characteristics of devotees in Bhava Bhakti and Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, Raganaga Bhakti. If one is not qualified or one cannot directly begin Raganaga Bhakti, he can do Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So, but bhakti has to be performed. So like that he gave some details about bhakti in the 25th chapter, and 26th and 27th chapters are jnana. So jnana means sankhya or enumeration or analysis of material elements is a part of jnana. So jiva and prakriti and purusha, they interact with each other, and their interactions are briefly described. So how jiva interacts with prakriti, by seeing, so by associating with so many modes, one will be bewildered, he thinks that he is the doer, and he gets entangled with the misconception of aham mameti. So that is jiva's interaction with prakriti. Right? Lord interaction with prakriti, Lord always remains the master of prakriti. So this is described. And the next sankhya is described, the enumeration of material elements and various characteristics. So in the next half of the chapter, Kapiladev describes the characteristics of pradhana, then time, mahatattva, chitta, ahankara, mana, buddhi, tanmatras, and all the five gross elements and five sense objects, all their qualities Kapila describes. That is the 26th chapter, and there is another description of Viratrup here. So now 27th chapter is continuation of jnana. It describes how jiva is in conditioned state. So jiva is actually, what are the words used there? Akritatvan avikaratvan. That he is unchanging and he is not the proprietor, he is not the doer. Right? And is nirgunatvan, that word is missing here. He is unaffected by its modes. See in the first line, he is unaffected by its gunas. So in the bracket we should write nirgunatvat. I'll write now. So although jiva is like that, he is conditioned in this world. But jiva does not lose its qualities. For example, a gold ring is there. Someone drops that gold ring in our SBT water, equalizer tank, there. Just because gold fell in gutter, will it lose its quality? If someone picks up that gold and he will throw it away, it just fell in SBT, I cannot take it. He will wash it and use it again, right? So the washing process is devotional service. And the gold that fell in the gutter is the soul that is conditioned in this material world. So Lord is sending his representatives to wash all these golden rings that fell in SBT. Right? That's what preachers are doing. So how one can attain liberation, and what are the qualities to be cultivated by a jnani, and how to infer the presence of the soul and super soul is described. Just like sun is there in the sky, and the sun is reflected in water, and the reflection of sun in this water is reflected on the wall. Just by seeing the reflection on wall, you can understand that sun is there. Similarly, jiva, pure jiva is there, he is influenced by modes. That is first reflection. And that jiva is, and that because of influence of modes, he attains a material body. Right? So modes and false ego, like that. So he is influenced by, he enters a material body. Just by seeing that this material body is animating, you can understand the presence of a soul. Right? So two layers are there. First, this material body is there. Behind this material body, there is ahankar, false ego. Threefold ahankar. Right? False ego in three modes. Behind that is the soul. So like that. And Devahuti also asks, the connection between jiva and prakriti seems to be so thick. It seems liberation is very difficult. Because jiva is so, although his spirit soul, he is so absorbed in matter. When will this ever, stop? When will this connection cut? The answer is tivra bhakti. One has to intensely practice devotional service to actually cut this knot between jiva and prakriti. And how to practice that intense bhakti? That is described. So that's how 27th chapter ends. So basically, he answered three questions so far. First question was, dispel my illusion. Answer is Adhyatmik Yoga. Second question is, what kind of bhakti should I practice to attain you easily? Then he described Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, Raganaga Bhakti, Devanam, Golanganam, all that. Third question is, Jnana. Then he described this whole Sankhya and this liberation, conditioned soul, all that. Then fourth question is Yoga. Now 20th chapter is about Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. So Ashtanga Yoga, Yama and Niyama, there are so many characteristics. Do's and don'ts of Yama and Niyama. Then Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara he describes. Then he describes the Dharana. Dharana means focusing on the form of the Lord, overall form of the Lord, top to bottom. Prasanna Vadanam Bhojam Padmakar Bharunekshanam. So all this beautiful series, we have seen that with so many beautiful images of Vrindavan Bihari. Then after that, Dharana comes Dhyana. Dhyana is focusing on individual limbs of the Lord, meditating on each limb, starting from lotus feet to lotus smile of the Lord, face of the Lord. So that is a wonderful, nourishing series of verses. And after meditating, Dhyana stage is crossed, then he has to enter Samadhi. For a yogi, this whole meditation on the form of the Lord is just a step to go to the next step. He will withdraw his mind from this beautiful form of the Lord and focus on liberation. But when a yogi, he becomes so attracted to this form of the Lord, he doesn't want to leave this form, he can become a bhakta also. Okay. So that is about yogi, unfortunate yogi. Like that. So now that is 28th chapter. The 29th chapter, she asks three more questions. Now that I have heard Jnana and Sankhya also, Jnana and Yoga also, and I have sufficiently understood the contrast between bhakti and the other two processes, now I want to know more in detail. I want to know more about bhakti, path of bhakti. That is fifth question. Sixth question is, I want to know about the nature of time. Also, time is a very prominent element in this world. I have to be aware of time to practice my bhakti nicely. I want to know about time. Third question is about samsara. birth and death of living entities, samsriti. So they, first he answers the fifth question about the path of bhakti. So he describes the bhakti in three modes. Earlier he described pure devotional service. Now this is bhakti in modes. So there is a tamasic bhakta, tamasic bhakti, rajasic bhakti and sattvic bhakti. So bhakti is not actually in modes. The practitioner of bhakti is in modes. The other day Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj gave a beautiful class, WIDC, inaugural class. That is on this. Next he describes bhakti without modes, pure bhakti. That is, madguna sruti matrena mayi sarva guhasaye manogatiravichinna yatha gangam bhasombudav. Just like Ganga will flow towards the ocean in spite of all obstacles. Similarly, just by hearing Krishna katha, just by hearing one quality of Krishna, the devotee's mind will run towards Krishna. That is pure devotional service. Lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hyadahiratam ahaituki avyatihata ya bhakti purushottami. So, bhakti yoga has to be performed without any motivations, without any interruptions. That is pure devotional service. And such devotees will even reject liberation. Salokya sarishti samipya sarupya aikatvam apyuta diyamanam nagruhananti vinamat sevanam janaha. Even if the Lord personally comes and offers him, sarupi mukti chahiye kya? Mera form milega. Exactly the way I am looking like, you will also look like. You want this? First devotee will ask, seva hai kya? Nahi, I don't need. I don't need your rupa. I don't need your opulences. I don't need your loka. If there is no service for me, I don't want to just hang around you. I want to serve you. So that is devotees. Devotee doesn't reject liberation, whether it is personal or impersonal. Devotee doesn't reject liberation out of arrogance. He rejects liberation out of humility. How can I take the privilege of staying in the same loka as the Lord? How can I take the same form as the Lord? How can I have the same opulences as the Lord if I don't have service? So he is not interested in all these privileges. He is interested in service of the Lord. So then Kapiladeva describes various components or angas of bhakti for the purification of mind, so that the practitioner will come to the stage of madguna sruti matrena mayi sarva guhasaye manogatira vichinna yatha gangambha sombudo. It's not so easy to attain this stage of bhakti where one just is mesmerized and one is just obsessed with hearing about the qualities of the Lord. It's not so easy. You hear one quality of the Lord and you go into trance. You get so absorbed. It doesn't happen so easily. Our hearts are so hard-hearted in this world that it is extremely difficult to get attracted to the qualities of the Lord. So one needs to follow various angas of bhakti, components of bhakti, to come to that stage. So Kapiladeva, from 15th verse till 18th verse, he describes around 16 or 17 angas that involve some deity worship also. Then practice of this angas of bhakti will give rise to pure bhakti. How? Just like air carries aroma from its source to the nose, similarly bhakti carries one's mind to the Lord. Now there is a flower in that garden, and from here if I get the fragrance, how am I getting? Air is carrying. Similarly, the devotee is here in this world and he is remembering the Lord. He is reconnecting with the Lord. How will it happen? The air, the aroma, the air of bhakti will carry his mind to the Lord. So bhakti is the connecting medium. Just like air is the connecting medium between my nose and the fragrance of the flower, similarly bhakti is the connecting medium between me and the Lord. And after describing bhakti so nicely, he would also describe the obstacles in bhakti. What are the obstacles in bhakti? Offense, criticism, hatred, and disregard. If one worships the Lord so nicely, if one worships the deity form of the Lord so nicely, with proper paraphernalia, following all the standards, very punctual, very clean, rules and regulations are very meticulous, and if he disrespects devotees, if he doesn't have love and affection and friendship with the devotees, whatever deity worship he does is oblations in ashes, right? So you can't consider an offering of ghee in ash as a sacrifice. The fire has to glow, then only it is called sacrifice. So once the sacrifice is over, the pujari may put ghee to put tilak, right? That is the result of sacrifice. Right? You can't call that as sacrifice. But here, this actually, this is a quite revealing thing. When many years back, when I read this 3-4 verses, I was very afraid of entering deity worship. But Krishna has his own plans to pull someone into deity worship. So hatred means the mind of such a separatist who worships me but hates other beings does not attain peace. Criticism: I am not pleased with such a person who criticizes other beings, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia. So just one needs to be careful of all this. So that is the Kanishta mentality, where Kanishta considers the deity as most worshipable and devotees as horrible. He cannot have nice relationships, he cannot get along with devotees, is not inclined to cultivate friendships with the devotees, but he imagines a friendship with the deity. But what is Lord's perception from his side? He is offering oblations in ashes, like that. He imagines, I am so close to the Lord. But devotees, these people, he is like this. He just separates himself from all the devotees. So that is very detrimental to one's advancement. Lord himself says, Rishabhadev also says. So the solution is, try to realize the presence of the Lord in everybody's heart. Not only other devotees, Lord is present in every single living entity. Just because Lord is present in his heart, his body becomes a temple. Just for that reason, one has to respect everybody. So respecting everybody doesn't mean losing one's discrimination. One has to respect a sannyasi, one has to respect a grihastha, one has to respect his co-brahmacharis, one has to respect people in the outside world also, one has to respect cows, dogs also, one has to respect other donkeys and sheep also. But one should not lose discrimination. When a sannyasi comes, you may offer prostrated dandavats. When a brahmachari comes, you may offer normal dandavats or embrace him. Or when some new bhakta comes, you may just say namaste and then hi, hello, how are you? In a Vaishnava way. Not like this. And when a cow comes, right, when you may pat, you may brush her. Or when a small child comes, you may pat him on the back. So, one should not lose discrimination. One should understand the gradation between living entities. If one understands the gradation between living entities, then one will be able to offer respect as much as that living entity deserves. When one is able to give the due respect to different living entities as per their position, then he will be able to chant the holy names properly. What is the reference for this? Dehanata jata jata tabe to gai bo harinama sukha dehanata jata jata sakala sammana korite shakati dehanata jata jata. Right? So to guru has to be worshipped and respected above everyone, and by one's respect and worship to guru, one will get the ability to respect and worship other people as much as they deserve. Even immovable living entities also deserve respect. Not only movable living entities, immovable entities. For example, this mic is there. The respect that this mic deserves is, after this you need to wind up nicely, you need to circle this wire properly and keep it aside. You can't kick this with your leg. Right? At least that much disrespect it will deserve. You need not keep this mic on the altar and start worshipping, doing aarti, rajbhog and sandhya bhog, all that. This mic, you need not be receiving all that. But it needs certain respect. What is that respect? I should not kick it with my legs. I should wind up properly. It is Krishna's property. This is being engaged to hear Krishna Katha. So that much respect one has to give. That is why Kapildev also describes gradation amongst the jivas. First, inanimate objects, starting with inanimate objects till the pure devotee. Then he describes the characteristics of time. So now two questions are over. Time is over, bhakti is over. Then third question is samsriti, birth and death of living entities. That is 3.30, 31 and 32. So here is a very graphical description by Kapila Dev, where he describes the life and death of a materialist because of his deep-rooted attraction for body, wife and children, home, etc. Atma jaya satagara pasudramana bandhushu nirodha mola hridaya atmanam bahumanyati. He thinks that this is great. Everything is this only, my family, my friends, that is everything. Griheshu kota dharmeshu dukkhatantreshu atandritaha. And the only happiness in his life is mitigation of distress. He just mitigates his distress to a certain extent, small extent. He becomes successful in mitigating this amount of his distress when his distress is this much, and he thinks this is success. For example, somebody is drowning in an ocean, right? He's swimming, 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 swimming. 1 hour, 2 hours he would swim with all his mighty vigor. Then at a distance, 1 kilometer or 10 kilometers, he will see some log is floating there. Right? Oh, that gives a hope. That is happiness for him. And he would just swim, 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 and then somehow he reaches that log and he realizes that it is a dead body. Right? He gets little disgusted. But still, it is useful. Then he will just climb on that. And then he will try to then swim, swim more, more. And then he is unable to swim anymore. Then he will see someone else, you know, 2 kilometers ahead. He is also drowning there. Although he is also drowning, he gets some solace, some happiness. Oh, one more person is there to accompany me. Right? Then he will just try to go to that person. And then he will swim there, swim. Both of them together will swim. And they exchange some pleasantries and how is your experience, how is my experience. He gets some happiness there. And then they will swim more, and then they will see a feeble boat, small boat. Right? Then there is a lot of hope. Okay? He will get some happiness. Then somehow he will manage to swim to that boat, and then realize that there is one person inside trying to row the boat. Right? And as soon as they get on the boat, they realize that the boat has a hole. Still now there is some happiness. When they get on the boat, they will realize there is a hole. Still, they will somehow stick to the boat and then somehow try to go. So like that, then they will see some ship there. And then they will try to go to that ship. And then they realize that somebody is just throwing some chain. Right? Then they will try to catch that chain. There is happiness there. Right? So then they will try to climb the, you know, high, you know, steamer, and then the chain breaks and then they will fall down. Right? Again they will try to go. So basically they are in the midst of the ocean of suffering of this material world. The only happiness that they get is just a little bit of false hope that the material world might give. In the ocean there could be some feeble causes of hope. It could be a dead body flowing on the top of the surface of the ocean. It could be a wooden log that is flowing. It could be a small boat. It could be a steamer. It could be some other ship. Or it could be a trace of island. It could be seemingly a shore of the ocean. Right? So, it is apparently it is seen that material world has a lot of happiness. But what kind of happiness is this compared to the unhappiness of drowning in the ocean, being in the ocean? And I didn't describe the other part of sharks and fish trying to devour the soul, devour the man who is drowning. So like that, this only happiness that he derives is this. Then, yeah, he's somehow he manages to accumulate money by so many false means, and in his diseased condition and in his final stages of his body, he will be ridiculed by his family members. You are good for nothing, you are unable to protect us, right? Your body is invalid, and other relatives of the family are waiting for his death. I think you are nearing your death, you should write your will, right? You should write this property on my name, you should write this property on his name. So like that, family members, younger family members may pressurize him. He has anxiety at that point also. like that the old age of a person is filled with physical problems, mental problems, and also so much of unfulfilled desires torment him, and whatever inability that he has to fulfill those desires will kill him from within, and body is killing. People are not empathetic. People just throw some food on him, right? You don't disturb us. You have hundreds of suggestions to give us. You just be there, watch the TV, read this newspaper, get lost. So they don't want their association. People don't want his association. Like that, old age is very horrible for him. And after old age, he will die in the midst of some lamenting relatives, apparently lamenting relatives, some of them, and some genuinely lamenting relatives. And Yamadutas will take him to the hell. And all the experiences that he has in the hell, not in the hell, on the way to hell. We have one book, On the Way to Krishna, right? And this section of Bhagavatam is On the Way to Hell. What all he will experience is given. His heart is broken by the threats of Yamadutas. On the way, Yamadutas will constantly chastise him, give him unlimited galleys, right? And he is not fed any food. And within just a few muhurtas, he is made to travel 99,000 yojanas. Right? He has traveled like that within just two or three muhurtas. Huh? Anything? Leave the key. Thank you. And his experiences in hell are described. You will know more in 5th Canto, 26th chapter. Super graphic details of hellish planets. And okay, other things are there. 31st verse is about, 31st chapter is about, after he experiences hellish conditions, he will undergo so many births in lower forms. Then he enters the womb of a human mother. And within the womb of a mother, what he experiences. So first night when the conception takes place, what happens? Then 5th night, 10th day, 1st month, 2nd month, like that, the growth of embryo within the womb of a mother is described by Kapila. So many graphic details. Now Sridhar Nimaya Prabhu, so I requested him to find the correlation between the modern embryology and the embryology given in Bhagavatam. So that is this thematic compilation. I don't understand this, but he did it. I just did the English part and little logical thing and we published it. Timeline of embryonic development. So Bhagavatam is saying that also. And sufferings of the child within the womb. So mother is eating some mirchi. Mother may have some desire to eat some mirchi bhaji or paneer sabji, spicy. And that affects the child. And child's soft, tender skin is affected by this pungent and spicy foodstuff that mother might eat. And you just can't imagine, just for 5 minutes also, to be in a packed local train from Virar to Churchgate is such a horrible experience. The embryo within the womb is in that kind of atmosphere only for 9 months. And especially after the 7th month, the experience is more intense because he starts developing some consciousness. If you are in Virar train, just being pressed like a chapati between hundreds of people, right? When you go out into Virar train, I am always conscious of my laptop. Laptop will definitely break if you are not careful. So his sufferings in the womb are very graphically described. And a devotee jiva who happens to enter the womb of a human mother will offer prayers to the Lord. These prayers are described. Then sufferings of the jiva after coming out of the womb. So whatever experiences he had within the womb are forgotten. So child will come out. And because this child is so small and ignorant, he has no ability to express his desires. He cannot speak. He doesn't know the language. His senses are not developed. But he has certain needs. Right? As a soul, an embodied soul, he has certain needs. And none of the people who are around him can understand his needs. Everybody would like take the child and then lift him up and then kiss him and then embrace him and hey, chichi, like that the child gets irritated. He would only cry. People cannot understand his needs. What he wants, when he wants, when he wants to sleep, nobody can understand. Like that, his childhood infancy is past. Then as a boy also, people cannot understand his desires, and he would get into disputes with other boys while playing. Right? He himself cannot understand what's going on within him till some point, till his senses are grown up. So like that he would be entangled in so many other things. And in this context, Kapiladeva explains the effects of bad association. When someone is growing in this world, bad association is a very big threat. So one important aspect of this is the association of opposite sex. Tat srishta srishta srishte su kon vakhandata dhi puman rishim narayana mrute yoshit mayyeva maya. So we need to understand that this verse is relevant for both sexes. For a man, woman is a woman. For a woman, man is a woman. That's what is mentioned, right? So it's basically problems with the opposite sex. So next one is, then he also gives some definitions of birth and death. So death means end of a reaction of jiva's particular activity. Birth means beginning of a particular type of reaction. So birth and death are defined in terms of one's karma. So now that is 31st chapter. 32nd chapter, we have just two more chapters. So 32nd chapter, Kapiladeva describes various processes on the Vedic landscape. There are some attached workers, practitioners of Sakama Karma. They cannot attain liberation, they may attain moon planet. Next, there are detached workers, Nishkama Karmas. They will travel through the path of sun and attain the Supreme Lord, liberation. And there are Hiranyagarbha worshippers and whatever, so many other forms are there, but the best thing is bhakti towards the Lord. So that is a couple of times emphasized in these verses, that bhakti is the supreme most path. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha, that verse comes here also. Then Lord Kapila speaks on jnana, and how various paths ultimately lead to the same goal. He described jnana also, yoga also, he described karma also, he also described bhakti. So many paths are there, but all of them are leading to the same goal. So Prabhupada also gives a beautiful example that there is milk. If you approach the milk through your sense of eyes, you will see it as a white substance. If you approach the milk with the sense of touch, you will feel it as a hot or cold substance. If you approach through the sense of ears, you will hear the glories of the milk, packet milk, powder milk, patwana milk, whatever. And if you approach the same milk with the sense of your smell, you will see it fragrant or foul or whatever. But the best way of approaching milk is tongue, mouth. You just put the milk, all senses get nourished. Similarly, if one approaches the Lord through mental speculation, he will realize the Lord as impersonal Brahman. If one approaches the Lord through the medium of meditation, then he will realize the Lord as Paramatma. If one approaches the Lord through the medium of devotional service, he will understand him as Bhagavan. Gauram Prabhu, when this milk analogy, one day we were discussing about that, and he said, I explained this verse with another analogy. If you go to in this restaurant and order a pizza, you are not charged for the pizza if you smell the pizza or touch the pizza or see the pizza or hear about the pizza. You will be charged only when you eat it. So that is his version of this milk analogy. So that's how he completes. And he also gives the qualifications of people who can receive this knowledge. Who can receive TLK, who cannot receive TLK. Qualifications of hearers. Then, activities of Lord Kapila. This is, Devahuti becomes so overwhelmed by hearing 8 chapters of philosophy, Sankhya and other things that Kapiladeva said. Basically, the essence of the entire TLK is practice bhakti. That is the essence. There are hundreds of other topics that are mentioned, but essence of the entire TLK is bhakti yoga. That is his emphasis. So Devahuti offers prayers, beautiful prayers. My Lord, it is not very astonishing that such a supreme personality of Godhead like you have entered my womb and took birth from my womb. It's not so astonishing, because as a small child, you or Vatapatra Sai sleeping on a banyan leaf, sucking your own toe in the waters of devastation. If you can do that, you can do this also. All the Brahmandas are coming from your sweat pores, your bodily pores, and within that one Brahmanda, when devastation is happening, you sleep on the banyan leaf and suck your own toe. You are outside and you are inside also. Similarly, you are outside me, you are the Supreme Lord, you are my source. But out of your causeless mercy, you have made me your source. Right? You have come, appeared from my womb. It's not so astonishing. And your prayers, if your name is glorious, Yannavadheya Sravananu Kirtanat. So these two are popularly quoted verses. Aho Bhata Svapachoto Gariyo Yannavadheya. To emphasize the power of holy name. Then Kapiladev, after giving his instructions, he is pleased with the prayers of Devahuti and he retired. He went to Ganga Sagar. Even now he is there. Maybe fortunate souls can see him. So, Sons of Sagara Sahim, it comes in the 9th canto. Then Devahuti was overwhelmed with feelings of separation from her glorious son, and she practiced the process of devotional service given by her son, and she finally attained perfection. Okay, so this is the end of 3rd canto. Thank you all very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.